well in your beds.
Because if this thing comes true, there ain't gonna be any more.
It's an elevator. Somebody sent those dents up here to get us. Now, there's no controls inside, but there's maintenance overrides in there.
I was wrong. We were so wrong. We must leave.
Hello, welcome once again to Dark Discussions, your place for the discussion of horror film, fiction, and all that's fantastic. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the state of New York.
Hi, this is Mike.
Mike, how are you, sir?
I'm fine, Phil. How are you?
Good, good. And we do have a couple of special co-hosts tonight. Basically, it's a television show, season one, that we're going to talk about. So we brought in some folks that have seen the show along with me and Mike to discuss. So let's introduce those folks. The first one is from the state of Virginia.
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how are you, sir?
I'm doing very well.
Excellent, excellent. It's very good. And in the state of Missouri?
Hi, this is Kevin.
Kevin, how are you, sir?
Thankfully well, not sick.
Yep, very well. Yep, there's some interesting news about season two of this television show, and it's delayed due to what you're referring to, and we'll discuss that in a bit. But before we get into the topic tonight, just for folks who are curious, we're recording this on April Fool's Day 2020, April 1st. This is a podcast for folks who are new to the podcast that basically does and critiques mostly films, but we do occasionally do TV shows and stuff as well. So genre stuff, so horror, sci-fi, fantasy, thrillers, techno thrillers, mysteries, grindhouse, art house, cult films, midnight movies, and the like. Basically, we try to critique and review, not just one or the other, and basically talk intelligently about a genre that deserves intelligence. Where can people find us? www.darkdiscussions.com is our website, where we have all our episodes there, all 420-something, or actually 430 by the time people probably hear this. We also have our podcasts that are spin-offs, including Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast that is new weekly. And then our well-received You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, Game of Thrones podcasts are still all there for folks to check out. And then we do have a few other podcasts as well. You can email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com, where you can give us your feedback and what you have to say about the show or things that may interest you, that may interest our listeners, that you want to talk about, whether it's a review of a film that you think people haven't heard of and your opinions of it, whether we should have folks see it or it should be avoided, or anything else that you wanted to give us. Also, if you want to join our Facebook group, so Dark Discussions podcast Facebook group is there, where we have a lot of discussions on various things. There's been a lot of feedback from the Vinegar Syndrome and all these other companies that are doing their sales for during this pandemic, and we've been posting links to those. There's discussions about The Tiger King, Ozark 3, Quiet Place.
Everybody drink.
Quiet Place 2 being postponed, among other things. So join us there at Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group. Mike, what can folks find on the front page of darkdiscussions.com? There's a Patreon or something?
Well, there is a Patreon account. doing all of this work isn't free. The main cost, besides watching movies and whatnot, that really all the rest of you have to do too, well, or opting to do, there's really the hosting costs, the server costs, and those can be kind of expensive, especially since we are, you know, providing you all these 400 and some odd episodes for free. But they do have to be stored somewhere and provide and downloaded from somewhere. So that comes from darkdiscussions.com. So if you'd like to help support us in our efforts, you can make a small monthly contribution or a large monthly contribution to patreon.com. So go to patreon.com and search for Dark Discussions, and you will, by giving a donation, what is it, every $5, Phil?
Yep, every $5, yeah.
Oh, good. I'm glad I didn't lowball that. For every $5 you get that you donate, you get an entry into picking a film for our quarterly viewer's choice. So if you give $15, then that's three entries, and you can pick three of the same films. Let's say if you wanted to pick Dolls by Stuart Gordon and From Beyond by Stuart Gordon and Reanimator from Stuart Gordon, you could do all three, or you could put all three of them into Dagon by Stuart Gordon, and that would you could use that as your choice.
Yep, that's right. That's right. So a couple of quick ways to get there is, as Mike said, patreon.com/darkdiscussions, or you could go to the front page of darkdiscussions.com, and there's the big Patreon link right on the front page. And where you can find us, our RSS feed, you can find us basically anywhere podcasts are found. So Stitcher, Spotify, iHeartRadio, whatever, and just search for Dark Discussions Podcast, and there will be a RSS feed there that you can sign up for or whatnot, and you'll get the podcast as they're released, and they're generally released weekly and so forth. So next month will be our 10th or 9th anniversary, something like that. I'll have to look at that, but anyway, let's see. We can get.
I think it would be 9 because we started in 2011.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So the 9th anniversary would be in May. Yep. All right. So I guess we can pretty much discuss what we're going to. Basically, our topic tonight. So, Mike, what is that we're going to talk about tonight?
Tonight we're going to be talking about the Netflix limited series. Well, actually, it's not a limited series, right? There is going to be a second season. So the Netflix zombie series, Black Summer.
That's right. Black Summer is a series that has been co-created by Kyle Schaefer and John Himes. Kyle Schaefer was one of the co-creators of Z Nation, which was like a kind of over-the-top cultish comedy zombie type craziness show that was on for a few years. Here he went off and did his own show with a new co-creator, John Himes. The two of them basically say that this is kind of a prequel to Z Nation, but to be honest, that's only in name only because its tone is completely different than Z Nation for folks who are familiar with that show. The show stars mostly unknowns except for Jamie King, who's been a character actress, television and some TV and films and whatnot for some time, as well as modeling. The series is 8 episodes. They range in between like 23 minutes to an hour to each episode. There was no like time limit. They just go by what the story would call for that episode. It follows a group of characters similar to most zombie apocalypse films, but oddly a little differently. This is fast zombies and not slow zombies, so this isn't Walking Dead or George Romero. This is more like the Zack Snyder or 28 Days Later type and whatnot. So I guess we can go around and talk about how we heard about the show and what we thought about it. And I guess I'll start. I actually heard about this show because of Mike. Mike had watched it last year when it first came out on Netflix sometime in Q1 or Q2 in 2019. And you said it would be something that I would probably like. And you actually said it was a pretty solid show. So since my wife likes a pandemic and disease-type films, I suggested it, and she was on board. And so we watched the series, and I think we binged it in like 2 nights. Yeah, we both loved it. It was really good. The action is great. The characters are interesting. The stories are interesting because since it's an ensemble cast, they focus sometimes on episodes that are specific to one or two or three characters and not all the characters. They are kind of interesting in the sense that they feel standalone as well every so often because the stories feel standalone, and then the next week the prior story doesn't necessarily have to affect how the series goes going forward. So that was interesting as well. I would give it a huge thumbs up. It was, I think, my it may have been my favorite TV show of last year. I think it was even better than The Boys and various other genre shows that I watched last year. Huge thumbs up. Let's go with you, Mike.
Honestly, I can't remember where I first heard about it. I do remember it being on Netflix. Maybe I heard something on Facebook talking about it. Maybe I just stumbled on it looking for something to watch. I really have no idea. But yeah, I remember watching it and kind of binging it in probably 2 days. The episodes are fairly short. Very few of them are over 30 minutes when you take out the end credits. And I was singing its praises about a year ago, right? It came out, I think, 11 months ago. So it is not something that you need to have seen Z Nation in order to enjoy. In fact, I had no idea it was connected to that until reading up on that later. Although certainly you may get something there one way or another. Z Nation is more comedic. This really is not, other than an accidental funny here or there.
All right, very good. Let's go with you, Barrett.
I had actually, strangely enough, started watching the show, and then I forgot about it. I think I had gotten maybe 3 episodes in, and then you started saying, hey, you need to watch this show, you need to watch this show, and so I finally picked it back up and got to the end. I didn't stop watching it because it was bad, I just had stopped watching it, something came up, and I didn't have time and hadn't thought about it in a while. But I think it's really well done. It's a good zombie show. And I like most of the characters. I think it's got some surprises in there that I wasn't expecting to happen to some of the characters. And it's a really decent watch, so I highly suggest it.
All right, very good. Let's go with you, Kevin.
Yeah, I'm not a zombie movie person. I'm really not. I mean, I enjoyed Shaun of the Dead, but that's more of a comedy. And I mean, I've watched Night of the Living Dead and some of the classics, Return of the Living Dead. I saw clips of that and I wasn't really that interested. But this one, I enjoyed. It was, it wasn't The Walking Dead. It's not your normal zombie movie. It kind of has more of a, I don't know, if a real feel is something I would describe it as, because I mean, I was comparing it a lot to The Walking Dead in that I like this way better than The Walking Dead. This has more of a, I wouldn't say a found footage style, but there's kind of a found foot, the way the cameras are held and all that. It just seems like it's more of a documentary or something about the days of the, you know, the early days of the zombie apocalypse. But I'm very impressed with it. I thought it was very good. And I started watching it because pretty much, Phil, you said, hey, Kev, we're going to do a episode on Black Summer. Join us. So that means you got to watch the show. It's like, all right. And I found myself liking it quickly.
All right, very good. So it seems like most of us enjoyed it a pretty good amount. I'm kind of like you, Kevin. I've been zombie out for a while because of the focus more on the humans than the zombies, and I want to see the monsters, and I'm sick and tired of stuff like The Walking Dead. So I felt this was a fresh take on the zombie genre. So maybe if they do more stuff like this, I'll get back into the zombies.
I think if anyone has seen the first 15 minutes of the Zack Snyder Dawn of the Dead, I think this has an awful lot in common with that.
I would agree.
Yep.
That's one of the things I really like about it, is that it's showing the beginnings of something like this.
Oh, yeah. That's
rather than the aftermath, yeah.
Yeah. The aftermath is no disrespect to folks who like The Walking Dead, but it's just not for me.
We get it, Phil.
Well, I've always told you, Mike, that I love the ones where the apocalypse is happening, not the ones where we're post apocalypse. So
right. Well, this is why I recommended this one to you. And just for the record, all the zombie films have, including, by the way, Black Summer, have been about the people, not the zombies. Just saying.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Though we're more apt to not focus on the societal stuff that The Walking Dead seems to do weekly. Again, you're going to defend Walking Dead, and I'm not. So let's just move on.
Well, no, it is what it is. But I mean, we're not here to just bash something because you don't like it.
Well, I love The Walking Dead, and I think they're very different animals. And The Walking Dead, though, has focused a little more on human versus human, with zombies as kind of the outside influence.
Right, and I haven't been bashing Walking Dead at all tonight, Mike. I said, it's just not for me. That's all I said. Anyway, let's move on from The Walking Dead. So, Mike, do we have a wiki for this?
Yes, we do. Wiki. The wiki for tonight says, in the dark early days of a zombie apocalypse, complete strangers band together to find the strength they need to survive and get back to loved ones.
Yeah, very vague, right? Kind of vague, right?
Vague enough, gives you a brief outline, a little misleading. The only character that really expresses desire to get back to loved ones as opposed to just survive is arguably the lead character, although I'm not sure you really have a lead in this series. She's as close to one as you're going to get. But yeah, that's basically it. It's a very broad kind of thing. The characters have to get from point A to point B.
Right, right. And oddly, her character, even though she's the quote-unquote lead, probably mostly because she's trying to get somewhere where her daughter is, she's probably on the screen maybe fourth or fifth most out of all the characters, which is kind of interesting. So your lead has less screen time than some of your other characters, which I guess we're saying aren't the leads.
Yeah, well, it helps that, like, Lance gets a whole episode just to himself.
Yeah.
Where it's Rose, right? Rose is never alone, right? She's always with a group. That even goes to her introductory segment in the very first episode where she's with her daughter and her husband for a good chunk of her screen time. So yeah, it's weird. Lance is out of the I was out of the picture for a good chunk of the show.
Yeah.
But I think just because he gets one episode almost completely devoted to him, you know, he may end up with more screen time than many of the other characters.
What's interesting about that too is that it's like there's no talking just about through that whole episode.
Through that episode,
very interesting.
And the episode in the bunker.
Yeah,
there's almost no talking there either. Really very, very quiet episodes. William gets a lot because there's two episodes that focus on him, where he's with a lot of people, but since one of them it's in a car, you know, he's usually somewhere in the camera a lot, and Sun is a huge character. So yeah, there's a whole lot of, I think about a core cast of about eight characters.
There's listed here, there's five considered leads, I guess, maybe that's all there is, right? I mean, let's kind of go through it. So it's Rose and
Spears,
right? So Rose and Spears are one group, and then Son, William, and Lance. Oh, well, no, Lance is actually with Rose. So, yes, and that's it, right? Those are really the only five.
Yeah, Rose, Spears, Lance. There was Ryan, who doesn't last long, spoiler warning.
Right, Barbara. Same with Barbara.
Barbara also doesn't last too long. There's the whistling man.
Oh,
yeah. Who doesn't last long. There's Manny. And, it begins with a C.
Carmen. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, so it's the two that join William at the diner. So they would be okay, so that would be seven. But you're right. We're not even including, if you include Ryan, that would be eight. But he dies quick. And that's the funny thing about the show is that they introduce characters with placards, and you think they're main characters, and then they knock them off within an episode or an episode and a half, which is kind of interesting. And then the real lead characters are the secondary characters in their story, because for example, William and Son. William is in Barbara's story, and Son is in Ryan's story, and yet they never have a placard to introduce them, and yet they outlive the people that were in the placard.
Right. There's a lot of, you know, it's one of the things I do like about it is it is broken up into chapters, a lot like reading a novel. You know, this is stuff that we have seen, you know, and certainly anyone who's a fan of Tarantino is used to that, you know, of having the blank screen and a title to it. And the first episode, they are the names of the characters, in theory, introducing them. But one of the things I think the show does really, really well is that each segment is its own thing. It's a lot like reading a novel as opposed to watching a film. Like you think of, so let's say, the end of Godfather, where there's the baptism scene.
Yes.
And you're seeing Michael Corleone, his child being baptized, and intercut through that are vignettes of assassinations. People being assassinated. Or if you want to go, you could go to the end of Return of the Jedi, right, where you have the battle above Endor, the battle on Endor, and Luke and Darth Vader on the Death Star, and that's all being intercut. Whereas in a novel, you know, characters get a chapter and it focuses on those characters. It doesn't switch back and forth without between that character and another group of characters without, you know, starting a new chapter. Right. So while this isn't a found footage film, it really borrows a lot from found footage in that it picks a character or two, focuses on things largely from their perspective. The camera very rarely uses wide angles unless it's outside, and you know, and then it's usually to give that impression of, hey, look, we're outdoors and look how open and unprotected we are, which is the same sense the characters have. For the most part, it's very, very claustrophobic in the way it's shot. You start with a very limited point of view. I think the episode with Lance, which is episode 4, which might be my favorite episode of the series so far. You know, if he doesn't see it, you probably don't see it. And it's strictly from what's going on from his perspective. And I think that works really, really well to add tension.
Indeed, indeed. One thing that's interesting is that chapter one or episode one is a really interesting scene where we have the zombie perspective at one point, which I felt was really cool. And it was actually probably my favorite scene of the whole show.
Right. You have the first episode. So the first episode is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 chapters, although the last chapter is basically the epilogue. You have one for Rose, one for Ryan, one for Barbara, one for Lance, and one for Spears. And the one for Ryan starts out on the one for Lance starts out on two completely unrelated characters. We have no idea who Lance is at this point. You know, we're thinking it's this guy there with his girlfriend. And, well, Phil, what happens to them?
Basically, and we see this in Rose's story, where they are arguing of which way to go. And when they're arguing, the woman, like a 20-something-year-old, takes a step out into the street, and she gets mowed down by a vehicle. And then the vehicle drives off. And Lance,
wasn't the vehicle wasn't the vehicle the pickup truck that was following people around?
It wasn't. I went back to check it. It wasn't.
Okay, it wasn't.
Gotcha. No, because it had because remember the black pickup, if I remember correctly, it didn't have a back on it. Right, it didn't have a cab on the back of the truck.
Right, right. That's true.
And the vehicle that hit the girlfriend did so.
It almost looked like an SUV, almost, because we had the cap.
Yeah, there are a lot of little interconnected things that the characters never realize are interconnected. For example, there's several characters in the first episode that walk past a burning car, and it's the same burning car because they're all in the same neighborhood. At the end of the episode, they all end up at basically the same place at a checkpoint. Some are on one side of the fence and some are the other side of the fence, but they're more or less all the same spot.
Right.
Because that's where one group breaks up, and because you start out with, you know, three different groups and you end up with two different groups, and Ryan and Son end up splitting up with each other. So, right. So what happens, the girlfriend reanimates as a zombie. The camera stays on the girlfriend. It doesn't normally what they would do is follow the boyfriend. But in this case, they follow the girl as a zombie. And the way we're introduced to Lance, and it's kind of his theme for the entire series, is his ass getting chased by the zombie. And that's our introduction to Lance.
Right. Right. After about a 10-minute vignette.
It's not that long. It's about 30 minutes.
Oh,
yeah. If you look at the first episode, the first episode is one of the longer ones. It's about 45 minutes. There's 15 minutes for the first segment. And then none of the other segments, and that's to introduce Rose and her family, because that's arguably the emotional through line. Rose wants to get back to her daughter after being separated from her. But all the other character introductions are less than 5 minutes long. Most of them are less than 4.
Right.
So they're really quick and to the point.
Right, right, exactly. Yeah, and so the woman becomes a zombie, and it's her going through backyards and going trying to get to any person she finds. And eventually she sees two people talking, and one of them happens to be Lance, and she dives on them and gets Lance's partner, who we never know who that person is, whether it's just someone he met on the road, whether it's a good friend of his, whether it's his brother, we don't know anything. And he just bolts, and that's how we're introduced to Lance, even though he's only in the segment for like 10 seconds, and yet it was introduced as his segment.
And ironically, that sort of is going to parallel how he leaves the show, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, not leaves the show, but his final scene in the series finale.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the one character we don't get we don't know his final fate.
Right. We're assuming he's going to make it to season two. Because they show him running and zombies chasing him, but not catching him yet.
Actually, a lot of the couple of the episodes ended with the "what the heck happened to Lance" kind of cliffhanger thing. You know, for example, like in the school, you know, Lance just kind of goes through these doors, gets thrown through these doors, gets knocked out, thrown through these doors, and you have no idea what happens to him until like two episodes later.
Yeah.
Should we say putting up a spoiler warning?
Yeah, that's
all
fine.
Right. Yeah, sorry. Yeah. So, just so we can talk freely.
Right.
Everyone recommends it. Go watch it on Netflix if you're subscribing. It's probably less than... There's 8 episodes. Most are 30 minutes or less. You can get through this in probably less than 9 hours. Less than 5 hours. If you're home, you're quarantined, check it out.
Well worth it.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Especially if you love the Collapse and zombie films too, because it's a solid zombie film, and it's also a solid pandemic film as well. So it's good stuff. Or I should say TV show, not show, not movie. All right, so let's talk about the first episode anyway, because that's the real setup, and we're introduced to pretty much all the main characters except for Carmen and Manny. Actually, we kind of see Carmen and Manny, but we don't actually meet them until episode two, I think.
Right. Should we just go through quickly, introduce who the characters are?
Yeah. Before we do that, one thing I want to say. So this is when the pandemic has already hit and people have been not quarantined, but stay in place. And they've been located to
isolation.
Yeah, they've been located to neighborhoods or towns that are in theory away from the pandemic. So it's not like the pandemic that we're in now, where you just walk into your house and you close your door, since there's a threat, which is the zombies. They've shipped people to towns and neighborhoods that are still clear. And so families have adopted houses that aren't necessarily their own houses, I don't believe. And it starts with an early warning, basically a tornado or hurricane horn, and everybody starts coming out of their houses, and that includes our lead character, her daughter, and her husband. And so this is the introduction of Rose. So yeah, all right, let's go through all the characters now, Mike.
All right, so Rose is the nominal lead. She's a, I don't know, I wouldn't want to say she's a housewife, but she's a mother of one, married with a daughter, and I would say, what, she 10-ish?
Yeah, I would say so.
Give or take.
Or, you know, TV 10.
I would say everybody's unemployed at this point.
At this point, yes.
Yeah, everybody's being given goods from the government at this point. So anyway, go on. Yeah, so the daughter's about 10 years old or so, I would agree.
Right, and her, right, since she gets separated, the government takes her daughter, but because of an issue with the husband, because he's injured and infected, you know, they won't let them on, and eventually the husband dies, and so she's alone and trying to find a way to get back to her daughter, and everyone is supposedly being quarantined at a local sports stadium. Is this L.A.? Where is this set?
Yeah. It's supposed to be L.A., even though it was all filmed in, Manitoba or something.
Okay. So. There's Spears, who is a 20-something guy in a army uniform. There's William Vargas, who's kind of a burly, let's say, 40s.
Yep.
Guy in his 40s. There's Sun, who is a Korean woman who does not speak more than a couple of words of English, but she knows most of the lyrics to Kentucky Road. There's Lance, who is, I would say, late 20s. Kind of seems like he'd be your dude, bro. Kind of the guy that hangs on your couch and plays video games.
I wouldn't say a dude, bro. I was thinking more.
Yeah,
of
dude, bro is more of a frat guy. I could see that. Yeah. I'm surprised he didn't come pre-equipped with the Cheeto stains on his fingertips. There's Ryan, who is deaf. And we never really learned much about him. Barbara.
He's a Jordanian actor, so I assume he would be Arabic, but yeah, we don't really find out anything about him.
Right. Barbara, who's an older woman who may or may not be a widow, because she doesn't know she's assuming her husband is dead. And then there's the last two are Manny and Carmen, who are a couple that they run into on the road later, who have apparently some shady dealings. And then there's a mysterious man who whistles, who kind of wanders in. I don't think he ever has a word of dialogue throughout the series, but he pops in and out at important moments before finally walking off in the penultimate episode.
Right, exactly. William is, we find out he's a from Texas originally, who does line, electric wire line, lineman. Yeah. He's a Latino guy, William Velez is his last name. His family's in Texas while he's in LA for some reason. And I don't know if they ever explained why he was in LA. Spears is a soldier. It appears that he's, removed from his unit, and he's just trying to, make it out of the new quarantine zone because they're trying to get everybody out of this area now because it's been compromised. But there's this backstory about him later, which we don't ever really find out his full backstory. That's pretty much it. It's definitely a, eclectic group of people, and all the characters are fairly interesting in a sense. I mean, there was no characters that I really disliked that much.
They are, like I said, eclectic. They do feel like a group of people that if the great claw game crane thing came down from the sky and grabbed a group of eight people off the streets of Los Angeles, you can very easily see that this being that random mix. And you don't get the stories on most of them. You pick up snippets of dialogue. You don't really have any of those forced exchanges of people telling you their backstory. Sun probably has the most interesting backstory of all, from what little I could discern of her, but we have no idea what it is because she doesn't speak English, and I confess I forgot to look up and see if anyone actually translated anything she said. Because she has a long monologue in episode 7. She has a long monologue where she's just kind of pouring her heart out and she's crying. And you realize you have no idea what she's saying to anybody.
Right.
You know, she's probably telling her life story.
Yeah, because they purposely don't have
subtitles.
Yeah, I mean, here it says that she's a North Korean woman who is looking for her missing mother, which surprises me. I just assumed she would be South Korean, but because how many North Koreans are there? What's that?
Right. That was one of the things I was thinking, because the few things you can tell about her is she knows how to handle a weapon.
Right. That's true.
And she can run. Yeah, right. She's a fast fucker. You see this in the first episode. They're all lined up at the gate at the end of the episode, crying to be let in, let through the quarantine zone, and they finally break through. And she has like two lengths easy on. She probably outrun Kevin. You know, she has a good two lengths on everybody behind her, and where everyone runs straight, she sort of peels off on the exit and ends up in the minivan with William and Barbara.
Right, that's right. Yeah,
which,
and she
which you
she
might even miss
Ryan.
If you don't really pay close attention.
Yeah, she loses Ryan and everybody too, because she's you're absolutely right.
And she's the one, you know, there's a scene later where Spears, who seems to have some experience also with the gun, kills somebody or shoots somebody, but it is actually, does he shoot him? I think he just beats him down. And Son is the one who takes the knife and stabs him in the head so he doesn't come back. Or we assume she stabs him in the head because he doesn't come back.
Right.
She
right.
like you know she's well, the one she, that delivers the kill as well.
Well, she's also the one that had wasn't she the one that in the store had the bag of canned goods and she,
yes.
She really you didn't want to mess with her with that either.
Right.
Right. Right.
And even that's now the irony is right that like so when they end up acquiring some automatic weapons, she like picks it up like it's an old friend. You know, she
right.
quickly, you know, checks it, makes sure it's clear, makes sure it's loaded, you know,
right.
checks the shoulder stock. She's clear, comfortable. And the irony is, of course, in episode 5, which is the diner. She's the one that's made to stay in the diner while our knuckleheads go out to try to kill the zombies and bungle that badly.
Well, she's the one that Manny was say was no, it wasn't Manny. It was I forget the guy's name.
Philip.
Yeah, Philip saying, "Well, leave her behind. You know, she's let the zombies eat her. You know, just because you know she's kind of useless."
Well,
and
no, that's not what it was. What it was is they wanted to throw someone out to distract the zombies and everybody could leave. And he was suggesting her to be the one.
Right, because they thought she was the least useful out of the group.
Right, right.
Isn't there a scene, too, where, like, somebody needs to be killed and she looks at everybody else and nobody else is doing it and she does it?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's well.
She waits a second, and nobody does anything, and so
right.
she does.
Is that the one that Kevin was talking about, where she takes the bag of tomato cans and slams them on the guy? Is that the one?
I don't think that's it.
No, it's a different one.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. My next door neighbor, she's from South Korea, so maybe I should have her recommend this show to her and ask her what Son is saying, because she loves all the Netflix shows, and so I'll have to get a hold of her, even though we've been self quarantined. But it would be interesting to hear what she says.
Well, yell at her through the windows.
There you go. Now you were going to say something, Mike.
No, I'm good.
Oh, okay. So that's a good point. I mean, also, I was thinking that she was looking at the gun because she's more familiar with probably Kalashnikovs or you know, AK-47s. And this is obviously whatever the U.S. Army uses. And so she has to just make sure what it is. But, so she's one of the – I think she could be the fan favorite character, to be honest. Actually, my favorite character was probably William, but we'll explain. You know, we'll talk about him later. But where do we want to go? What do we want to discuss? So the first episode is really where we just introduced where we meet, like we said, Rose. We met pretty much everybody. And then we find out who Spears is, which is he is being held by some soldiers, and he kills the soldier to escape, the one that's watching him, and then he puts on that soldier's military uniform.
And they want him for something, but we don't exactly know what.
Right, right. They make
very
it sound
mysterious.
Like,
sounds like money, like he knows where money is or something. It's very strange.
Yeah.
Well,
exactly.
closer to the end, they were saying that he was, you know, that he murdered people and all that sort of thing. But, I mean, and I'll get to it later, but I really don't know what to believe about him. Just because one group of people saying, oh, yeah, you know, he's a bad guy. But then these people, they're saying that he's a bad guy, weren't really great people themselves.
Right.
Right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. The thing that me and Barrett talked about on text a couple of weeks ago was how the characters became a family in a sense. So, for example, you know, for folks who are familiar with Walking Dead, Rick meets a few survivors in episode one of, or episode whatever, four, two of season one, and those are his core people. They become quote unquote family, and so Carol and, you know, a few other characters. Here it's the same way, is that even if some of our characters, specifically Rose, discovers that Spears may not be who he is, by the time episode 7 comes around, she and him are family. So she will do anything to make sure he survives, and vice versa.
And well, there's there's a moment at the in the second to last episode, mm-hmm. where she's basically forced to make a choice between trusting Spears or trusting two new people, and she really has no reason to trust any of them. Right. She's known, as far as I can tell, it's only been like a day or maybe 2 days, right. Over the course of the entire series. But
right. Those Spears did save her, you remember, at the in
right.
episode one, from her husband who became a zombie. But
right. Right. And but it's the fact that I think these situations have brought them closer together. They've had each other's back. They can trust each other. There's this a scene in the diner where they ask, because they know William and Son have been driving together, and they and I don't remember if it's Phil or if it's Manny. Phil who asks him if Son is reliable. Like, does she have his back, or does he know her? And he says, well, I don't know. We just met. He said, but can you trust her? He said, oh yeah, yeah, she's got me, because in episode two, they were in the truck. He's almost killed by a zombie, and Son, you know, he has the hammer to try and hit him, but can't hit the zombie without hitting Williams. She goes out the car window, hits it in the back of the leg with the hammer to get it to turn around, and then clobs it with the hammer.
Right.
Speaking of that scene when they've crashed, I love that scene.
Oh, God, yeah.
The minivan crashes, and the woman in the back seat, Barbara, is not wearing her seatbelt and goes right through the windshield. And you totally aren't expecting that, and it makes for a good scene because you're just not expecting it.
Definitely a bit of a shocker.
Well, she was one of the main characters in the first episode, and now she's just instantly killed.
Well, that's the reason why it's such a big and shocking scene, is because she was one of the introduced characters with a placard, meaning they were tricking us to think she was going to be one of the leads for the whole first season. Yeah. And actually, what she was really just a cipher to bring Son and William together. And
she serves to introduce William and the vehicle. and then Son gets in the vehicle, too. Yeah, so
right.
they needed her because they needed the car.
Right, right. And that's the thing, is that William and Son become like a family unit as Rose and Spears become a family unit. And it's all occurs in, like you said, Mike, 24 to 48 or even 72 hours, and that's it. It's just that in that 72-hour period, each character was that loyal and helpful to the other that they became trustworthy, and you know, they would back those characters rather than just random strangers, even if they're authority figures like military forces or policemen or whoever.
Right, and I don't think this is trying to say anything about human social cohesion or, you know, our instinct to form communal bonds. I think it just is speaking to something that we recognize, that, you know, we do form bonds pretty quickly with people if you have extreme circumstances.
Yep.
I do think, you know, one of the issues we're having right now, not to date this particular topic, you know, but like these characters at the start of the show, we're all experiencing some social distancing. And like, I know my co-teacher, you know, she lost her husband last January, a year ago, January. And so she's home alone. You know, she has nobody there. I don't even think she has a pet, you know, and so she's kind of going a little stir crazy. And I was on the phone with an hour today and she was driving me crazy, but she clearly has a need to have somebody to talk to. I think really our people are going to be fraying a little bit at the nerves because of that lack of social connection. We like to connect to people, and we will immediately, as soon as you get any group of people together, one of the things they're going to do is split into factions. Right? They're going to say, these are my people, those are those people. And sometimes it's over stupid shit. Like, what team do you root for?
Sure. Yeah. No, that's true. I mean, great example is me and Barrett, right? Barrett, we're just working together. And then I search you out on Facebook to befriend you. And then I see that you like Doctor Who and all this other stuff. And then I start talking to you about all that stuff. And that's how you're, you know, joined the podcast for some of these episodes and stuff. So yeah, it's really true, Mike, where people, just random people can form connections pretty quick, especially in desperate needs like this. And if one puts out their neck in desperate needs for another person that they barely know, and obviously they're not sociopaths, because if they wouldn't be doing it, then you're going to apt to consider that person trustworthy and back that person.
Well, they might be doing it because they need food later, so the sociopath might do that.
That's true. Yeah, you never know. Yeah, I mean, you never know. That's true. But in this episode here, or I should say this season here, the five main characters, except for Spears, we can say aren't sociopaths, and even Spears doesn't seem like it either. It seems like he may have been a petty criminal or something there, or been framed by somebody, and otherwise it seems like a decent person, even though, you know, he killed a soldier at the beginning to escape. But, you know, I mean, then Rose kills two soldiers to free him for, you know, in cold blood. So, you know, it's, I guess you do what you got to do in these dire circumstances, and you got to trust the people you can really trust, especially when there is no government anymore. And I guess that's why most of these stories are more interesting, even though they're zombie stories. They're as much pandemic stories as well, where society collapses. You were going to say something, Mike?
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I just know, looking at this particular group, from what we see of them, I mean, the one guy I never would have trusted would be Manny.
Right.
And
Carmen. I wouldn't have trusted Carmen either, because they were both in that black truck.
Well, right? They were in the black truck. They kind of pushed it off on the driver, but that's convenient because the driver had died.
Yeah, exactly.
But just the way he acted, the fact that he, like, clearly knows about this thing that is this illegal thing going on, he clearly is a shady character, and I don't know that I would have trusted him to go down into that, eventually to follow him down into the bunker. Like, of all the stuff that they do, that is probably the thing that most stretched the credibility for me.
That was the most dangerous too.
Oh, it was.
I mean,
right. Yeah. So basically, it's like this underground mobster type gang type underground club, like music club, you know, basically right. The movie Bliss, down in a bunker, basically. And a lot of shady characters and all that. They can think they can get guns through them, and this Manny guy and in some ways are Carmen know about it. And they said, hey, we should go there and we should get some guns and whatnot. So, yeah. One thing I've always thought, Mike, and I never brought this up to you because we never have done an episode that required it, but this kind of did, is, like, for example, it first occurred to me during The Walking Dead when they were in the prison and they all go to bed. What happens if someone croaks in the middle of the night? They become a zombie and they can kill everybody that's sleeping. So I've always felt that when you're in big groups in these zombie apocalypses where if you just die, you become a zombie, everybody should be locked in their bedroom. So if they croak at night for whatever reason, just, you know, natural causes, they can't get up and kill everybody. Cause all you have to do is have one person. Watch.
At least have a watch. Somebody that's awake at all times.
Exactly. Yeah. And yeah, so like this bunker thing is kind of like that. Go on, Mike.
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot of times you do, and they do, like, at least in one case on the show on Black Summer, where someone stays up to keep guard, to stay watch. Because obviously, I'd imagine most of these things, somebody's standing guard because you're in a very hostile world, right? So even if your more immediate concern is a dead person coming, a zombie coming up to you while you're sleeping, the odds of any one person dying randomly in their sleep when you, in this particular case, they all seem relatively young and healthy. I think, right. I mean,
all you need is an aneurysm, though, or something, you know, some.
Oh, right. And that could happen. But right. Yeah. I think everybody in the show is probably under 50. Sun seemed like she's probably in her late 30s, maybe somewhere in. Barbara was probably late 50s, early 60s. But yeah. Barbara never got her ass out of the car. So who cares?
Right.
Well, not when she was alive. That's. Well, when she was alive for about a half a second, she was out of the car.
That's true. Right. But Barbara, even though she was 50 to 60, she seemed relatively healthy anyway. So if she had survived, you figure she had another, 10 to 30 years anyway.
Right. If this was the real world and you got a phone call, if that said Barbara died in her sleep last night, everybody would be shocked, right? Because she seemed, yes, she's old, but she's not old and decrepit and on a ventilator or something like that. So
just tells you should always wear your seatbelt.
Well, in the car.
in the car.
Outside the car.
Yeah, right. In the car.
That would just be weird.
Right.
Walking around the supermarket with my seatbelt on.
I guess we can go over some of the episodes and how the show works its way to the end. So basically, like we said, the first episode was really everybody in that neighborhood, and the hurricane alarm comes on, which has obviously been turned into a breakout has occurred, and so everybody has to bolt to military trucks to get the hell out of there, and then chaos happens and whatnot, and the people that are left are basically our main characters, the ones that couldn't get onto the military transportation vehicles in time. So what happens is that the daughter of Rose and her husband got onto the truck, and then chaos happens, and the truck leaves without them. The husband,
Rose's husband, has a wound, so they won't let him go on. And then chaos happens, and the truck leaves without Rose or the husband,
or even a bunch of other people that were still waiting in line. So Rose's husband dies, becomes a zombie because of the wound. She gets saved by.
Spears,
and that's their story. And then Sun's story is basically her and Ryan, but her story really starts in episode 2. And then we have Barbara, who she's
driving the car, and or she stops
or SUV. Somebody, yeah.
She
or
helps SUV. Somebody. Yeah,
right. And someone is pleading with her, "Please let me in. Please let me in." And she's like, "Well, are you a Christian? Are you a good person?" And does she say, "Are you a good Christian?"
No, he volunteers.
He says, "I'm a Christian. Are you a Christian?" Yeah. Said, and by the way, I like the fact that she was Barbara and he was Ben, and those are the two leads from Night of the Living Dead. But he finally convinces her to let him in, so she slides over. She's an older woman. She lets the man drive. The man gets in the car. It's not her car. She makes that point. And then as soon as he gets in, he tells her to get her ass out.
Yeah.
And she gets out. And right after she gets out, William...
Someone attacks... We don't know it's William until episode two, though.
Right. But William comes to the door and grabs a guy and drags him out of the car and beats the shit out of him. And she jumps probably into the back of the car. Probably ends up killing him. And that's the entirety of their story.
Episode one, right?
Yeah. For episode one. Son hooks up with this guy, Ryan, who's deaf, kind of wandering the streets in the daze. He stops to help a woman who's lying dead in the middle of the street, and Son is like, "No, fuckhead, he's going to turn into a zombie. Come." She grabs him and runs off with them. And that's like the extent of their story.
And it's interesting, too, because you have a woman who can't speak English, and a man who probably can read lips, but he can't hear, but he can't read Korean lips, obviously. So, Korean language. So that would have been interesting. That would have been similar to Tom Cullen and Nick Andros from The Stand. But they don't go long with that story because they split pretty quick.
Right. Oh, what I do like, though, is there's that little moment where they go into somebody's house, because everyone just leaves their homes and many of the doors are unlocked. So they walk into a house and there's a guy there with a family down on their knees.
That's right.
Duct tape on their mouths, hands tied behind their back, and there's this guy there with a shotgun. He's like, "Get the fuck out!" And they just go. And that's one of the things I like. There's so many instances in this show that while we're rooting for our main characters, there are numerous times when they will leave somebody in the lurch, where they will not... where they don't open the door to let somebody in. And it's smart. There's a reason why they survive. But, in a lot of other movies and TV shows, they would either be characterized as a villain for that or a coward for that, right. Or they would have made the heroic thing and they would have got the person in just in time, or they would have gone helped and come back to try to save these people.
This is why I always think of this stuff as like the movie Titanic or just in general the Titanic, when the captain knows that the ship's going down and they have no more lifeboats left, he screams out everyone for themselves at that point. And this is that point. So, you're not going to stop a mugger when you're about to get wiped out by zombies. So, or just crazy people with guns. So I would call it more the captain screaming everyone out for themselves at that point. In other words, he's saying, try to survive any way you can.
This is one of the few moments with The Walking Dead where there was an episode where the characters are driving in a minivan and they pass somebody who's hitchhiking on the road with an orange backpack, and he's asking for help, and they just drive past and they won't stop to help. And on the way back, he's dead on the side of the road. And they stop and just grab his backpack and drive off to grab his supplies.
Well,
and that's what some people would do at that point.
But to be honest, a lot of that is in real life, in modern day, where there is no zombies, there's a chance that if you pick up a stranger, you're going to get shot and killed. So in a dire situation, you're probably even more apt to be shot and killed. So, it makes sense that you wouldn't pick up the hitchhiker in the apocalypse, never mind in real life.
Ask Barbara.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Barbara should have just said, well, let's just say this. I mean, as you and most of the listeners know, I am a Christian, and I have had people.
We're all Christians, my friend. We're all Gentiles.
Well, no, I've had people say, "Well, you're a Christian, you should do this, or you're a Christian, you should do that," trying to take advantage of me and my faith.
You know, I mean, one girl, well, it's a long story. I mean, somebody broke something at a store I worked in, and she said, well, you know, and I was telling her, you know, you got to pay for that. She says, well, Jesus would let me go. I said, well, Jesus doesn't pay my check.
Right.
You know, yeah, which is kind of the.
Wasn't like, that one of the lines in the Bible, render unto Costco?
Well, actually, it was a family-owned gift shop, so it was kind of, you know, actually, I think I said, you know, they said, well, Jesus would let me go. I said, yeah, well, Jesus doesn't own the store.
Jesus would have told you to pay for the damn thing you broke.
Right, you know, and Jesus wouldn't tell you to take advantage of my faith. But, I mean, that happens a lot, especially, you know, when people are like, oh, you're a Christian. Well, I'm a Christian, too, and they try to. Yeah, and so, I mean, when the guy in the car was like, oh, you're a Christian, right? Well, I'm a Christian, too. It's like, right, I don't think so. I don't believe you, you know. And I've had enough of experiences like that where if somebody tries to pull that on me, I instantly think they're lying.
Well, and that's my point. It's whether Barbara gets snookered by that guy or anybody else. I mean, there's another reason scene, which is hilarious that I'm sure we'll bring up. I might as well bring it up now, where Son and
William
are driving, and they're in this alley, and Barbara's there with them too, and these people come running up to the door, let me in, let us in, a guy and a woman, and the woman says, I'll do anything, I'll suck your dick, I'll give you money, and they just drive and leave them there.
Yeah, they leave them behind.
You know, and the thing is and I brought this up in the Cloverfield Lane movie, 10 Cloverfield Lane movie, Mike, which is you just don't let the people in. You just don't let them in. And because the moment let them in, you are making yourself more apt to get in trouble. And
more vulnerable.
And more vulnerable. And Eric brought this up in It Comes at Night, when they let in the kid and the young couple, and he goes, well, they all deserve to die because they were stupid to let them in the first place. You know,
well, again, everybody comes at this in a different perspective, and God, I know, you know, I know talking to people, whether it's, you know, what's going on now or back when 9/11 happened, or people who said, well, I can't believe that this is happening, you know, whereas those of us who are horror fans, we kind of have exposed ourselves to, you know, but force ourselves to watch what the worst of humanity can do. And yes, we understand that, say, Texas Chainsaw Massacre or Halloween are not real people. And when they say Texas Chainsaw Massacre is based on a true story, we know that's a gross exaggeration. But our interest in the macabre also does get us to investigate, you know, those true life stories. You know, what is the real story of, say, Ed Gein or Jeffrey Dahmer? Or, you know, we know people are capable of horrible, horrible things. And some people are going to learn that the hard way.
Yeah, well, I mean, exactly. During the start of the, a lot of the lockdowns and, you know, only essential stores open, you know, there was this guy and this girl in California. I just went into a convenience store and was just taking all this medicine and not paying for it. They were just grabbing it all, put it in their bag and left. And the thing is that nobody can do anything about it because the police weren't going to respond. And that just showed, and everybody's like all upset and shocked that this is going to happen. I'm thinking, you know, it's kind of the human nature we have these days. I'm not surprised at all.
Well, it was one of the dumber things, I think, not to get political.
San Francisco, that I think made that law where they're not going to arrest people anymore for theft at stores or something.
For theft that's under like $50, which gives small store owners, gives the people carte blanche to go in and steal, you know, a half dozen Snicker bars every day or whatever it is, you know, do like kids to go in and shoplift every day because they know they're not going to be punished for it. And when this thing started happening, I think it was Bill de Blasio, in mayor of New York City, had said, you know, that the cops should not, you know, should be arresting any more people. You know, I understand the idea is prisons are a terrible place to spread disease. Right. Or I mean, actually, they're a wonderful place to spread disease. That's the problem. So you don't want to put as more people in prison. In fact, they've let a lot of people out of prison to reduce the crowding, and hopefully they're not doing it like alphabetically. They're starting with like the 80-year-old man who, you know, got caught shoplifting, not with, you know, just, you know,
right,
the
local pedophile.
Yeah, the local pedophile who was Adam Abrams. And he, but, AA, you go first. You don't broadcast that message to the public. Hey, guys, the cops aren't going to arrest anybody anymore. There's a whole bunch of abandoned stores out there. What's the worst that could happen? We understand people are terrible. Again, different people, it's easy for us to say, distance from it, watching actors on a screen, what we would do, when it may be something completely different when it is your neighbor, when it is someone who's there. I know I go, and pleading with you. I have to do this every year when I talk to my students about what do we do in a lockdown. And it's like, well, if somebody's, you know, knocking on the door, what do? Let them in. It's like, you don't know. You have a tiny little window that you're looking out of. All you can see is this person's face. You can't tell if they got a gun to the back of their head. So, but then they're going to die. It's like, yes, and you won't. Our instinct is to help people. That really is what it is. And it's the can you override it? We, as sick, twisted horror fans, have thought these things through.
Exactly. So when you have a zombie with a ponytail charging you and you walk into the house to try to escape and there's a guy there with a gun and people tied up with gags over their mouths, you're not going to try to free anybody and stop that guy from doing anything because, first of all, that guy has a gun. You don't. And second of all, there's a zombie with a ponytail that's about to bite your head off. You just bolt and you go to the next house. And that's not cowardly or evil. That's, I would call that smart.
Good sense. Yeah.
Yeah, good sense.
And that's what I think this does so well in that opening episode is that, you know, you have the vignette for Lance, which focuses on the dead girl who becomes a zombie because it tells you, okay, here's the zombies. Here's how you become a zombie. This is what they do. This is the type of zombie you have. You have a fast zombie. You do not have a shambling zombie. And all you have to do is die. She's not bitten, right? She just dies and she goes.
Right, she gets mortally wounded from a car, right? And
that's one of the things when people say, why are zombie stories popular? I always say that's one of the reasons because it's a very simple mythology that at this point everybody knows. You don't have to spend time going over the rules. You don't have to try to justify this, that. Like if you have a vampire story, you have to explain, do they or do they not get affected by crosses? You know, do they and all these, what are the rules of the vampire lore? Because every vampire tends to be different. Zombies, you just need to know, are they fast or slow? And that's basically it. And we know you to nibble your toes.
Right, right. And there's the only other thing you know need to know about zombies is do you become one when you die or if you just bit?
Right.
And that's it.
And they show that to you very quickly by having the couple of segments where like Rose is trying to get in and people are turning her away. And then when the son and Ryan get into the house and they run across the hostage situation, they tell you this is a dangerous world, that people are scared and they're panicked, without having to come right out and say it to you. They don't turn it into a large subplot. They give you little pieces of information, and they trust you to put it together.
Yep, exactly. And that's the thing that makes me say that the five lead characters with Spears still, we're not 100% sure, but what we've seen of him in the show anyway, not his pre-story, his story before the world collapsed, including him then, our five main characters all seem like survivors, smart, and not evil.
Right.
I would agree.
What about you, Kevin? What do you think of this? Being the quote unquote, we're all Christians again, but you're more apt to use your faith over pragmatism. Would you consider these five folk bad people, good people, cowards? what would you consider them? And the five I'm talking about are Rose, Spears, Sun, William, and Lance.
Well, I think they're decent people who are just trying to survive. Okay. And I know that it seems to me that, I mean, they realize they are in a situation where, you know, if they were in a house, if they stumbled into a house where there was a hostage situation going on, and they would run out, but the first thing they would do is call for the police. You know, they're like, okay, sorry, excuse me, wrong house, and they left. Because they knew if they did anything, or if they tried to rescue them or anything, they would be either hostages themselves or shot.
You know? Or zombied.
Or zombied, right. And so there's nothing they could really do. You know, and so they just, and I think they're in a bit of a panic, so it may not even have registered to them what was going on. It's, okay, we are in trouble. Okay, here's a situation where this would only get us into more trouble. Okay, let's get out. I don't think that they're bad people. I don't think that they're cowards, you know, especially in that situation. It's just, they're just trying to survive. I mean.
Yeah, so you're pretty much on the same page as the me, Barrett, and Mike.
I don't disagree with it. I mean, the only thing, like I mentioned earlier, the thing that just irritated me was the guy trying to use the woman's Christian faith to, essentially carjack her, you know, and it's.
Well, you know, and that was intentional to show you that this world, anybody will do anything to, you know, even criminals, right?
Yeah, and right. The thing that, and I have to admit, and it shouldn't, but it did, where, like, we were talking earlier about, you know, the one woman saying, you know, let me in, or, you know, I'll, you know, give you oral sex, if you will, and they're like, no, you know, because, I mean, I don't know what I would have done in that situation. Actually, I think at the time, I probably still would not have let him in. Not because, pretty much because that van was empty. I mean, that van was full. You know, they really didn't have room for more people, as far as I remember. It would have been a little bit more cramped. And, I mean, you don't know who these people are. You don't know if they are infected. You don't know if they're going to turn on you or whatever. I mean, even if you did have room to let them in, I would have had somebody in, like, somebody back there armed with something, just watching them the whole time until they showed they can be trusted. I mean, if anything, I would have just said, hop on the roof if you really want to get out of here, because I wouldn't have let them in. I really would not have. And right, I wouldn't, right. I mean, if I was in the situation, and that's in a panic situation. I mean, if I was out on the street today, you know, and somebody... You know, and some woman said, oh, hey, can you please drag me to this place? I'm really desperate. I'll give you oral sex, you know, just to get me to. I'd be like, no, you know, if you're really that desperate, call the police. But I mean, yeah, I wouldn't do that today either, because I mean, I wouldn't pick up people I don't know, because I know enough about human nature to know that. There's always that. I mean, yeah, they probably would have been decent people, but do you want to take that chance? Do you want to take that chance that they are going to turn on you? You know?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and
I would say that again, I probably would have made taken the chance in that situation, but that's just me.
But even then,
I would have been tempted to, because I would have wanted to help. I would have wanted these people to survive.
Me too.
But at the same time, though, I'm thinking to myself, kind of like what Mike said, is, you know, you don't, that one student trying to get in, you don't know if that student has a gun in his head. Just, well, they're going to shoot that student. Yeah, but they won't shoot you.
Right.
And it's kind of the same. Huh?
I said, being a good person doesn't mean ignoring risk. Right.
Right.
It's the,
right.
You know, you have to recognize, if you're like a lifeguard, that there are certain circumstances when you can save a person, and certain circumstances when you can't, and you're going to put your own life in jeopardy to a degree that's going to make it unwise.
Right, and
just,
also,
I personally just like, feel that example, situation they would have been okay to do it.
But Kevin had a good point, which is two things. He said, "What happens if they're bit?" And
check
them
over
the
after you get somewhere. You just watch them until then.
And then the second thing is, you don't know if they have guns and they're going to hijack your car.
And let's also face it that let's look at the people who are in the van already. Four complete strangers.
Well, three, but yes,
three.
Right. Three complete strangers. So you have no, I mean, you don't even know the people that are already in the van. You kind of got together out of happenstance, out of, you know, let's just all pile in this van all at once and hope for the best. And to bring in two more people that nobody knew only increases the risk. Now, granted, no, if I was in a van full of friends, and especially if I knew that one of my friends was armed with something, I probably would have thought differently, because it's like, you know, I have a friend in the back and said, all right, you know, so-and-so, you watch them. And I know that that person will watch them. So if they try to do anything, my friend in the back will keep their eye on them and prevent them from doing anything. And if they did try something, my friend would say, hey, they're trying something. All right, get out. You know, but you don't know the people in the van with you. That group of people, that trio of people have only been together for, you know, less than a day.
Mike,
remember that, for a few minutes at that point.
Mike, remember that movie Fractured that we did about the English people, where a couple has their car broken down, they get picked up in the middle of the night by another car. And then you find out the people you picked up are the murderers, and then they kill the husband, and they try to kill the woman, and it's like, if they just hadn't picked them up, they would still be alive today. So it's the joke that Eric always talks about with that Ozzy your mother, where I said, that's terrible what happened to that woman, the movie's gross, whatever, and he goes, yeah, but she was stupid for picking up the hitchhiker in the first place,
right? So, but I mean, look, let's be honest, there are certain things, like you know, there were Halloween candy scares that were originally based on nothing, but right. There was the legitimate Tylenol scare. Don't pick up a hitchhiker thing came from a few noteworthy incidents. The odds of you picking up a hitchhiker and dying are very, very, very low. If you do pick up a hitchhiker, obviously,
but your odds,
as for adult men, the risk of something happening to us would be, say, a lot lower than if you were, say, a 19-year-old girl, or, you know, or a, you know, an older, more fragile man who's not in good health. You know, those are all different things that are going to be having greater risk factors, but we do tend to pay attention to those risks. You know, even when they're small, we are aware of them. You know, part of that's living in the modern world. But anyway, we're still like having trouble getting out of the first episode, right? So maybe we should.
Right.
We're kind of transitioning.
Well, that's the thing that's interesting about zombie shows, or apocalypse shows. Never mind zombie shows. You always start talking about what would you do, and that's what would happen.
So that's why I always say that. You know, I've seen enough zombie shows that I understand the importance of getting into a group of people you can trust that have a lot of resources. And because I've watched zombie shows, I know one of those bastards is going to turn on me. So in the middle of the night when I'm watching, I'm going to slit all their throats and take all their stuff if they can do it to me. That's my goal.
If there's a zombie apocalypse, don't come to St. Louis.
There's always one sociopath in a zombie show. You're absolutely right.
There's always the one person who gets bit and tries to hide it. And I like the fact they get rid of most of the cliches right away.
Yeah.
In that first episode, you know, the only thing that's like horror and comedy, you know, have something in common that they both try to surprise you. You know, just either they surprise you with a laugh or they surprise you with a scare. And I don't necessarily mean jump scare, although that can work, but do they do something in a way that's unexpected that you don't see coming? And that's what I think this show really does well.
Well, it's a little bit, I mean, for example, I just saw Shaun of the Dead, And there's the one scene where, okay, spoilers, but I mean, Shaun of the Dead has been out for almost for over 10 years now. So if you haven't seen it, you know, that's your fault.
Well, Mike already spoiled The Godfather, and again, that's 50 years
well,
old.
That's true, but the whole point is that
it doesn't matter.
They're in the Winchester pub, and all of a sudden, the mother reveals that she was bit. You know, that's kind of your serious twist. You know, your serious surprise. You know, that type of thing where you know you weren't really expecting that. Now, kind of with that though, it's. If you die, you become a zombie. If you bit, you become a zombie. But if you get a wound big enough or deep enough, you become a zombie because going back to the first show, but like the father, he had a gash. It wasn't a bite. It was a gash. And that's what they were checking for too. It says, you got a gash. We're not letting you on the truck. And that's why the mother and the daughter were separated from the husband, because the mother wasn't going to leave her husband, but then they grabbed the kid. But then later on, when they're in the into the diner and everybody, you know, went outside to try to attack the zombies and it failed miserably, you know, when they came back in, that one jerk of a leader, you know, all of a sudden he has this gash in his arm. He's like, oh, it's just a cut. They're like, no, that's more than a cut. And that's when they ended up killing him, because they knew he was going to become a zombie from that gash.
Right. Well, he had to go anyway, because
he gets thrown to the zombies. They don't just kill him. They throw him.
That's right.
Zombie.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. They say, well, we kind of figured out who we're going to throw to the zombies now. You, because you're going to be one of them soon anyway. Here you go.
All right. Let's talk about that. So Barbara, what the hell's the guy's name again?
Lance?
Barbara, William, and son are being chased or followed by this black truck. Eventually, the black truck becomes threatening, and it's obvious they want to hijack either their SUV or supplies or something. We don't know what. And to avoid them, they do a chase, and eventually, while they chase, William looks behind them, and then when he turns around, he sees that he's going head first into a factory wall. And when he hits the wall, Barbara's dead. And then the truck that was behind him, they hit the wall too. And a couple of people in that truck died. And then the survivors, which is son and William, and then three people from the truck, which is Philip, Manny, and Carmen, all run to this diner, and they lock themselves in this diner. And so you have two groups from the same accident in the diner. And three of them came from a vehicle that was threatening and did some basically illegal things and whatnot. So I don't know what I would have done, but I would have tried to probably kill Vinny and Carmen too, to be honest.
Well, William makes it into the diner, right? The Barbara has died, yeah. And so she quickly resurrects because they run into a truck, right? And she flies through and chases them in, and they could have shut the door.
I would have left him out there.
But William says they let him in, and William says later why he let him in to son, even though son can't understand him, which is we had to let him in because people, if not zombies, people are going to break the windows to get in.
Yeah.
And then they're compromised. So they had to let these bad people in.
Okay, you know, thank you, because I missed that. And it was bothering me why on earth did they let these people in the first place, considering the fact that they were in a truck that was trying to run them over, you know, and they had no idea if, you know, who these people were, but they all they knew is that these were people in the truck that just tried to run them over. Right. So,
and okay. In that case, let them break the window. I'm going out the back. By the time they break through the window, the zombies are going to be on there. Are they going to be on their ass, not on mine? And right. And at least one or two of them are dead.
Well, at the same time, though, it's shelter. It's
food. Regroup, maybe?
It's a regroup, but also, like I said, it's shelter. I mean, they right. have shelter. There's a sense of protection at this point.
I'd have taken the chance.
Yeah.
Well, the other logical option is this. At that moment, you can either have five people in the diner with two zombies trapped outside, or you can have two people in the diner with five zombies outside.
Right.
Which do you prefer?
I'd want them dead because the reason I'm in the diner is because of them.
Oh, I'm not saying I don't want them dead. I just don't know that right now is the time to kill them.
Well, I don't know. What's the difference between two and five? I don't know.
But the difference is that they're not dead yet, and it may take them a few minutes to become zombies if they had got bit. There's a chance they would have broke the window, as William was saying. Because this diner, even though it's packed with cardboard already, because there must have been survivors there earlier that left, and, as well as posters and you know all that, you know, specials, you know, today's specials and all that on the windows. The whole building, front of the building, is like a typical strip mall diner, which is our standalone diner, which is all windows and glass doors, as well as glass fire doors for the second pair of doors, so or windows, whatever you want to call them. So there's the whole front is all glass, right? So all you need is one of those three bad people to pick up the paper dispenser and throw it through the window, because there was one right outside the front door, or just a rock, for that matter.
So, I mean, I'm fine with the logic of it.
One of the things I liked about this episode. Yeah.
What's that, Mike?
I said one of the things I liked about this episode was actually something that had not occurred in the car, which is that we do have two short scenes with the other group, with Rose, Ryan, Spears, and person number four.
Lance.
That is when they're walking through one of these back streets.
Oh no! That was Earl, but at that point, I think it was either Lancer. I can't remember. Yeah,
it was
either
Lance.
Yeah, it was Lance.
And it was those four. And they do spy somebody attacked and killed, and then get up and go chase. So again, there's confirmation that you die, you get bit, you resurrect right away. But
the kidnappers. Pedophiles.
But they see right. They walk past a car. And there's a mother in the car, and they said, well, maybe she needs help. And they approach the car, and she holds up a revolver, and you know, Spears says, or are you going to get yourself shot? And they just move along. And then we don't see them again until the end of the episode. And in the end of the episode, the car drives by, and you just see the face of the little girl in the back window. And I think there's three other adults in the car with her, and they point out that's not who she was with before. Right, so they're probably some kind of – and because of the look on her face, right? These are like likely to be pedophiles or something right. horrible is going to happen to her.
The worst case, they killed her mother. Right. I mean, or the best case, the worst case is they killed her mother and they're also pedophiles.
Well, best case is that her mother died and these three people came to her rescue, but I don't think that's what it was.
Right. They were implying that wasn't the case. Right?
Yeah. So yeah, I mean that again, they're just reinforcing. It's a dangerous, dangerous world. Nobody can be trusted, and it's not necessarily going to be a happy ending for everybody. And that's about as heartbreaking a thing as I think I've ever seen in any zombie story, and I've seen a lot of them. Because usually they don't do that to children. If they do, you know, the child at least dies and comes back as a zombie.
Right. Right, right. And then kills the pedophiles. But in this case, It's concluded with her being kidnapped, and who knows what's going to happen to her.
Right.
And that's the thing that's interesting about the show is that obviously if you are at a family reunion, or if you're at work, or you're on your street in the zombie apocalypse, or any pandemic occurs, you know the people, so you already know who's good and who's bad or whatnot, and you can coordinate and join forces with the people you know who are good. But all these people were all strangers, and they're strangers for a number of reasons. One, because this wasn't their real home. They were there in this neighborhood because they were all had to escape their old towns. So everybody's strangers. And second, the moment you begin to trust certain people, you got to hold on to those people because you just, like you said, Mike, you just don't know if the next person is going to be the bad person or not. So once you find, out of a group of strangers, once you find those who you can trust, which is kind of what Rose and Spears do, and then Son and William do, then at that point, you got to hold on to those people and stay in that group. Otherwise, what happens to the girl, or what happens to the woman that offered oral sex, or what almost happened to Barbara, will happen to you.
And at that point, you're not worried about, you know, do you have similar tastes in movies? You know, will you protect each other is all that really matters. So that's episode two, where there's this cat and mouse game between the two of them. And yeah, that's a short episode. It's about 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Minus the credits. And then
it's the school episode, right?
And it's the school episode. And this is one of the longer episodes. And I think that's probably the flaw of the episode. It's longer than most of them. And it stretches out the premise probably longer than it needs to. But I still enjoy what they do with at the end of the episode. But we'll get it. So you have group, I would say our primary group, because it's the group with Rose and Spears and Lance and Ryan, stumble upon an abandoned school. Now, the fact that the show is called Black Summer should clue you in that it's in summertime. They make a reference in the first episode about how many weeks it's been since they moved. They're packed up. Rose talks about it.
Right.
And it's been about a month,
I guess. Yeah,
right. And when they're in the school, Lance is slipping through a calendar. When he picks up the calendar, it's May. So we're probably now in June or July, given how they discussed it. Again, I like the fact that nobody just flat out says, boy, this has been going on for 12 weeks now, hasn't it, dear? You know, or something like that. They give you the clues to let you figure it out if you care to see it.
Right.
So they go in the school, which is not a bad place to get supplies. They raid the nurse's office to get medical supplies.
Yep.
I don't know what she grabbed out of the Lost and Found. I mean, she has the Lost and Found box. I don't know if she grabbed the clothes that would have been in Lost and Found or just put stuff in the Lost and Found box.
Right.
For them.
I think it was Lance maybe that went to the cafeteria off screen and he comes back with like a bunch of canned goods, but we never see the cafeteria.
Did he grab a can opener?
I don't know.
I don't remember.
Cause that kind of ties into the next episode.
Right.
So they go to the school. Now, this is a city school. It's a large building. And I think Spears says it. This place is big, you know, meaning it's large. It's going to be hard to protect. It's going to be hard to stay safe. So they lock themselves in the band room and hunker down for the night. They do have a problem because Lance is an idiot and Ryan is deaf and they want to bang on the drums.
Right.
And, they have to, no, can't do that. And then the next morning, right, they hear some commotion.
Child crying or something, yeah.
Right. Something. And they go to follow. And anyway, the group splits up.
Always Ryan, a bad idea.
Yeah. Well, they didn't watch enough Scooby-Doo. Ryan and Rose go one way. Lance and Spears go another. While Lance and Spears are exploring the building, there's an explosion. There's a booby trap that goes off that shuts the door and separates the two of them. And that's the last we see of Lance for this episode.
Right.
Ryan and Rose go into the boys' locker room. And I laughed at first because Rose like kind of puts her finger up to her nose because it smells bad because it's a boys' locker room that's been abandoned for a couple of months and it's in the summertime. But then they find a whole bunch of dead bodies in the shower.
Right.
You know, a warning sign. And I'm trying to remember what happens to separate those two, which is weird because I just watched this yesterday.
Oh,
I think she's enamored by the bodies and she kind of walks away a little bit.
Right. Well, and then she hears the voice again and she just bolts looking for it because she thinks it's close. And then he's still behind looking at the bodies. And I think that's how they spread. And then she gets locked into like the girls' locker room or something because she goes in there and then she finds the girls' bathroom. She goes into the girls' bathroom and she finds that it's just the intercom system they set up, the kids, the people that own. And then they lock her in there, and then Ryan and her are separated at that point. And he can't hear her, so she can scream for help and bang on the door as much as she wants, and he could just walk by not even knowing.
So, you know, it turns out that it's a bunch of kids who are using this as a trap to lure people in. They end up kidnapping Ryan. They want Spear, and basically they want Spear's gun. So they get into a Mexican standoff kind of, well, not Mexican standoff, but they get into, you know, your typical exchange, prisoner exchange. Give us the gun and we'll let him go. And they say if he moves, shoot him. Now, Ryan, being deaf, can't hear that. He's got a hood over his head. As soon as they pull the hood off, he sees his friends and he begins to walk towards them and they shoot him anyway.
Right.
And the kids immediately scatter.
Right. They pull down like the grate or something because they know. Basically, I think what they were going to do is just kill one of them anyway because they wanted to see one turn into a zombie and kill the rest of them.
Yeah, this was a game to them anyway.
Right.
This was entertainment for them, which really made me it made me not like those kids at the time.
Right.
Oh yeah.
All those kids deserve to be shot and killed. There's no doubt about it because they're evil and murderous.
So Spears and Rose.
It doesn't matter their age, right? I mean, they were evil and murderous. You had to take them out.
So Spears,
even the youngest one, not only was he in on it, I think he was the one who shot.
Yeah,
he did.
He's the one who shot the guy.
That's right.
Yeah, because I think they say something like, "Oh, you won't shoot him." He says, "I won't, but he will." You know, because he got the little psychopath kid that's there.
So this is the second twist of the show, which is Ryan, who we were told by the placards was one of the lead characters, gets killed in episode 3.
And you don't think, because of just modern politics and the way thing, you know, that they're not going to use this guy that they introduce as the deaf person, and they're not going to and then murder him. You know, he's like the easy guy to identify if you're chatting around the water cooler. Why is here? There's the deaf guy. You know, and nope, he's done.
The actor is actually a deaf actor in real life, a deaf human in real life. So just a heads up for those who would be upset if they cast someone that wasn't deaf in the role.
And Kevin and I both have spouses who are hearing impaired, so no offense to them. But the reality is that being hearing impaired and being stone cold deaf as Ryan is would be a severe handicap in a situation like that. Not for this specific circumstance. It's certainly better than being blind.
Well, yeah.
Or in my case, of being obese and lazy. But you know, because I'm not outrunning anything. That's why I got my money on the slow zombies. Because if they're the fast zombies, I'm fucked.
you're talking about deaf people in, you know, kind of in those types of situations. We did see A Quiet Place. We saw it actually in a theater that was, I'd say, 85% deaf people. And if we were ever,
how do you know?
One, we knew a lot of them, and two, we saw a lot of them signing. And when we, you know, we
did you guys go together as a whole group of you know, like some organization that, that was for deaf folk, and you all just went together?
Well, this particular showing was going to be what they called open. There's different types of captioning. There's closed captioning, open captioning. When you see something in a movie theater that says, okay, this is going to be open caption, that means the captions actually, that means the caption's going to be on the screen.
Right. So that's better than yeah. So most people would show up that happen to be hearing impaired.
Right. Yeah. But the thing, yeah, I mean, that's why they did it, actually, is because they knew, like, St. Louis has a decent amount of hearing, you know, hearing it, deaf or hard of hearing people. They usually go by deaf or hard of hearing. They don't right. go hearing impaired. Like, you don't call my wife hearing impaired. She's deaf. But anyway,
the deaf people. My wife is hearing impaired. She's not deaf, so.
Well, she's hard of hearing. But anyway, the thing is that the deaf people were very noisy. Because they don't know they're making noise.
Right. Like right on the drum.
Right. But I mean, well, the thing is, there was another movie that was very similar. It had it starred Stanley Tucci, and it was a very, very similar situation. And this girl that was playing Stanley Tucci's daughter, who was obviously hearing, because there's no way she could talk like that. Well, and but the thing is that she.
All right,
let him finish.
All right, but we're getting way off topic. I just wanted to ask a question. All right.
Let him finish.
I'll just...
Well, okay, the thing is that the deaf guy in this situation, you know, even in a zombie apocalypse or whatever, if you don't want the zombies to hear you, you know, sometimes, I have to confess, deaf people can be very noisy because they don't know they're making sounds.
Yep.
Okay, I'm done. Go on, Phil.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. No, it was my fault because I asked you the question. I go, how did you know... all the people in the theater were deaf / hearing impaired / hard of hearing, and that's the only reason you went on to explain that. But yeah, you're that's a fair point too, because yeah, if you don't know you're making noise because a deaf folk may be walking down the hall and they may not know their shoes make a clicking sound while. Even if they're you know tiptoeing, so you're right. That's a fair point, Kevin. So, in a zombie apocalypse, if you are disabled in any way, it may unfortunately be an issue, especially when half the world is gone. But I assume that's what you were trying to you Mike and you Kevin were trying to get at, right? Okay, yeah. So yeah, and that's what happened, unfortunately, to him. He did not know. He didn't hear that he had a gun on at his back, and people were saying, "Don't move, or we're going to shoot you."
No, I kind of remember.
Well, I think they were going to shoot him anyway. I don't think it was a. I don't think it was a "Don't move, or we're going to shoot." You know, I think they were just going to shoot him anyway. It looked like that was the plan.
Sure. Yeah, because it was a game. Eventually they get out of there. What's that?
If I remember correctly, didn't you say that this was your least favorite episode?
Yeah.
I would agree with that. Yeah, it's my least favorite episode too.
Yeah.
It's kind of slow, a little bit slow, a little bit long. Its length is longer than the other episodes. Not quite as,
not as kinetic. All the other episodes are very kinetic because there's always action going on. In all the other episodes, well, this one is a lot of slow parts compared to the rest of the show. So it didn't fit as well with the other episodes, in my opinion. Again, that doesn't mean it's not a good episode. It's just that it was my least favorite.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, this one stands out to me as a school teacher. It stands out to me because I just like the fact that they avoided being sentimental with the kids. And in fact, they used the sentiment to exploit
Rose.
The adults, right? To use it to exploit Rose and to be a trap. And I like that.
Oh, actually, Ryan, too. Yeah, Ryan and Rose were the ones that were sapped, while Spears and Lance were, let's just get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
So I agree with you, Mike. That's a good point, because they changed it around. And again, that's what you said about the show, is that they took stereotypical tropes in this type of genre, whether it's apocalypse or pandemic, and they kind of flip them around. And this incident, and it was implied that this school had probably been populated by these kids for the whole month, and they weren't people, meaning the military, or whatnot, didn't know they were there because they were this part of the city is in the pandemic's part, so it's the part that if you're want to survive, you wouldn't be living in. And so these kids could get away with doing that, where they could pick off people as they straggled along. What else do we want to talk about on this episode? Anything, or do we want to move to some of others?
The only thing that's relevant, I think, at the end is that Rose and Spears are trapped at the end because the door's locked and they can't get out. And this homeless guy, homeless looking guy, I should say. The guy that
a rural folk.
I don't think he's rural, but this guy who's been whistling on and off. We watched him in the background before. Opens the door, lets them out, and they escape with him.
You know what's funny is that he, at the beginning of this episode, he was walking over to them, and Spears pulls out his pistol, and then he turns to the right and walks away while he's whistling. And I think he was going over to them to say, don't go into the school. And then at the end of the episode, he's the one that gets him out of the school, which is kind of funny.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if you rewatch the beginning, it looks like Spears, being scared that this guy could be a threat, actually prevented them from being warned to not go into the school.
Yeah.
But anyway, continue, Mike.
Yeah, so that's pretty much the end of the episode.
Right, and Lance is separated, and we don't know Lance's fate at that point.
All right, so let's go to episode 4, which is probably my favorite of the series.
Is episode 4, yeah, that's the Lance one, right?
That's all Lance, yeah. The episode is titled Alone.
It's pretty solid.
Yeah, and there is very little bit of at the very beginning with William and Son, who step out of the diner. The zombies are still there. They run back in. So they recognize they're trapped, and they're not going to be able to resolve that until episode 5. And that's pretty much, you know, the only time we step away from Lance. From there, right, we kind of just then cut to Lance waking up in the school and what happens to him.
Right. Now, the one thing that was interesting about this episode, well, there's a lot of things that are interesting, but one thing that I noticed immediately is there's not many zombies on the street. There's no humans, but there's not many zombies either. So even though this is a quarantined area where zombies have taken over, most of the zombies have probably already been shot and killed because they don't exist. There's no corpses on the road. There's no zombies just walking around. If there is a zombie, it's one every so often. It's not like a horde of them.
Well, but we do get I don't remember if she calls them a horde, but there is a reference to there being a horde of zombies coming that way in the next episode. And right, the reality is that the zombies are looking for food. And if you have an abandoned area, you know, the zombies are not likely to just be spread and scattered throughout. Either a zombie is like trapped in a car or trapped in a building and can't get out, or it's going to wander in search of food. And they're looking for stimulus, and you know they may just be attracted to another zombie, a noise another zombie makes. You know, but they are much more likely to end up sort of herding together, clustering. You know, in most species, unless they are very specifically territorial, most species tend to have that sort of clustering pattern, where there's just a lot in one area and a lot in another area and a lot in another area, and a lot of distance between them, and probably zombies would follow something similar. This is an area that's been abandoned.
And they're grazing type too, right? They obviously aren't grazing, like grazing animals, but the way they move is like grazing animals.
Right.
Because they keep on moving. They're not like stationary in one section. They follow wherever the food is, similar to like how turkeys or cows would do it if for grazing animals, for example.
Right. And I do think people are really good at killing things, and that's something that, you know, zombie shows tend to gloss over, is that if, you know, people who are dying, you know, we're turning into zombies, people would get good at killing them in large numbers really quick. Because we kill things with wonderful efficiency. And the zombies, at least in most mythology, these are not smart, you know, and would be relatively easy to distract, to fool, you know, and that's going to would be the saving grace. It'd be easy to outsmart even the fast ones.
Right. Yeah.
So what I like about this episode is this is the one that feels most like it's a video game, in a way, and it also is the one that feels the most real. And the reason I say this is because you're focusing on the one guy. So if you're playing whatever, Resident Evil or Dead Alive or Island of the Dead or any one of a million zombie games, that's pretty much what it is, right? It's you as a person alone making your way through the zombie hordes and trying zombies or trying to survive. You know, and so here you got a guy who's starts out in the school, first has to find his way out of the building, immediately starts getting chased by zombies, and he's got to figure out a way to go. There's actually a lot of video game style characteristics in this, because a lot of this, there isn't an overarching story. It feels like if you've played games like Fallout, right, when they wander on the school, that kind of feels like, oh, here's a point of interest. It's not a really a mission on the map, but here's a place to explore if you want to do it, or you could just move on. What will you do? You know, and because we're gamers, we go in and we try to steal all the stuff and carry as much loot as we can as we go out. You know, so here you basically have Lance in a similar situation. He's got to make his way around, but he also has he's unarmed, so that's what makes it interesting. And the kids being kids, I don't know who they kill, but they're watching him from the roof as he leaves the school. They shoot somebody and throw him over the side from the second floor so that he quickly turns, dies, turns, and begins chasing Lance.
Right.
And that's a nice frenetic piece of action. Lance, despite what I said earlier, is having a very hard time outsmarting the zombie. He cuts his hand at one point, which is one small continuity thing I'm going to have an issue with later.
A couple of bad luck, too, because he has some plans that actually are outsmarting the zombies. It's but when he's about to swing the axe, he hooks it on the ladder of the fire engine or something.
Oh, and
like
I love that. I mean, that's the part. That's exactly the kind of shit that I could see me or somebody else doing, right? You sneak up on the zombie, and you're about to whack him in the head, and you know you end up catching it on the rack of fireman equipment behind you.
Right, right. Oh, and then the other one where he runs into the firehouse and he thinks he's safe. And then he sees, with just bad luck, that whenever
the door is half open.
Yeah, a quarter. Well, it's like two feet off the ground. Yeah. And it's like, are you serious? And it's like, what do you do? You know, if you don't have the power or whatever, there's nothing you can do.
Right. And I don't know about you.
I mean, I thought it. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Sorry.
I've never been in a firehouse, so I don't know if I could walk up and lower it, or if it only works on something that's automatic. And yeah, you'd be putting your life in your hand to try to risk that.
I personally thought it took him quite a long time to grab that axe, because I'm sitting there, he's wandered around, he's trying to get out, there's like this axe right there, and it's just like, I'm screaming at the screen, grab the axe, and it takes him way too long for any rational person to see, oh, hey, here's an axe. Not only is it sharp on one side, it's got a pokey thing on the other side. Perfect. And he takes him forever to grab it, and then he gets it caught in a chain, so that thing becomes non-usable. He just kind of leaves it there, and I'm thinking, you are such an idiot. I mean, granted, I'm not in his situation, but I still just can't help to think, oh, what an idiot.
Well, I think we can all agree that Lance survives the series because of luck. More than his own
yes.
wits.
Sheer luck. He should go to Las Vegas.
Not now.
When it opens back up again.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. The character you think least likely to survive turns out to be the survivor. And I've always said this, Mike, about these type of films or any film, slasher films, whatever. If you are a bunch of people together, there's 12 of you, say, and there's two brilliant people and two idiots, and then you know everybody else is in the middle or has certain skills, you know, the guy, the rocket scientist, whatever, and a slasher comes up, or a zombie comes up, and no one knows that it's a zombie or a slasher, and then he's just slicing whoever's up front are the people that gets killed. It has nothing to do with brilliance or stupidity. It's just bad luck because they just happen to be the ones that got bit or the ones that happen to be near the door when the first attack happens. And this is what I like about this show is certain people that are dead and are zombies now were probably brilliant or rocket scientists or the gun marksman or whatever, but they weren't expecting zombie apocalypse. And so when the zombie apocalypse happens, they got taken out while the guy in his basement playing Dungeons and Dragons on the computer is okay. And then when he comes upstairs, it's like, holy shit. And he doesn't get, and so he's a survivor because of luck. And then from there on, he just has to survive. And that's another cool thing about this show is that the last person you would think would survive happens to survive because he just happened to be the person that wasn't near the zombie when they first attacked, for example.
Right. So what did you guys think for this episode?
Oh, it was great.
I like it. Yeah, it's great. And it does a lot without any person talking much, you know? It's just
right.
You just see it. You experience it.
Right. Yeah,
well, and certain things happen, like the roof of the RV collapses, and it's or the bus or whatever it is, and it's like, yeah, that could happen if it's, you know, a piece of shit, you know, and it's bad luck. It's nothing to do with him being stupid. It's just a collapse. But go on, Mike.
Yeah, but this is as you were saying before that the episode is almost all silent. Once you're done with William and Son at the first minute or two of the show. And
it's
again, this
Lance.
Is a quick, it's all Lance, and it's a very quick episode.
And then you have the homeless guy again at the end.
Yes, you do. Yeah.
Who never says a thing.
Right.
Right. Yeah, and then, you know, he ends up being stuck in a library. I did like the fact that if you look, he's where he's hiding, you can see Stephen King's cell over his shoulder. So that was a nice call out.
There you go.
He finds a dog. That is important for later in the series. But the dog doesn't want to have anything to do with him. He calls it over, goes over and says, no, I don't think your survival skills are as good as mine, and wanders away.
Oh, another good scene, too, is when he goes into the grocery store, because obviously that's a smart spot if you're looking for supplies. And he's interrupted. This zombie takes out another person who comes in, and then he's able to escape because of that. You know, just luck.
Yep. And actually, I would never have gone in that grocery store, I don't think, because those doors, that's those motion sensor doors, those right. are zombie traps.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Because the zombies... Yeah. Are just quite dumb luck going to wander in and it's going to going to open up and then they're going to go in the store and they can just wander around before and maybe never end up coming back to the exit, you know, where they have to file into the exit to get out. And I could just see zombie after zombie accidentally stumbling in. I certainly see people going in there and getting killed by a zombie, which is going to create more. You know, it's like a really bad Sims idea. You know, we're just going to get a bunch of people dying in the grocery store because you don't have an easy way out. But the reason I mentioned it, I asked about the can opener in the previous episode, because one of the things that either saves his life or screws him up, and I laugh because he's kind of going through the routine. He gathers up his groceries. He brings it to the checkout counter, picks up his canned goods, and realizes, oh, wait, I don't have a can opener. And so he goes back in the store, gets can opener, gets scissors. And it's while he's doing that that the zombie stumbles into the store.
Right. Yeah. Oh, how about also the scene where he finds the key of a car on the visor? And that was like
yep.
luck. But he can't drive the car because it's either a stick shift and his hand is all fucked up, and so he can't get the car to start, and so he appeals out of that.
Yeah, by the way, did you notice there was somebody stumbling in the background when he was in the car? It's just like for a half a second, you see somebody walk past way, way in the distance. You just see a bloated figure through what little bit of the window you can see.
All right, so that's probably the zombie that comes into the grocery store later.
That would be my guess.
Yeah.
Well, he seems to have equal parts bad and good luck.
Yeah,
he seems to have equal parts bad and good luck.
Right.
Right, yeah.
But he's learning, right? Because at the end he gets saved, he says thank you.
Mm-hmm.
But when he realizes the person who saved him
got bit,
and he theoretically bashes his head in.
Well, and he has a lot of bad luck, too, because when he falls asleep on top of the RV, or whatever it is, and when he does, the zombie has stopped being frenzied and is just stumbling around, and so he's going to leave by, you know, getting off to the other side and bolt or sneak away, you know, tiptoeing. But the goddamn roof breaks on him, and then the zombie's alerted again, and so he's screwed again.
What happens is he's on the top of the bus, and he tries to sneak off the bus. He sort of slides down. The zombie's standing alert at the back, because I guess these zombies, when they're not chasing something, they're on like hyper alert status, waiting for something to chase, right? So they're that hyperactive dog in the backyard waiting for the bunny or the squirrel. And he tries to ease himself down the front windshield of the bus onto the hood, and that's where he makes noise, alerts the zombie. So he jumps back on the roof, but now he showed the zombie how to get on the roof because it realizes it can climb up on the roof, on the hood rather, and then from the hood up onto the roof of the bus.
That's
where he, with nothing else to do, he leaps over to the
onto the RV,
RV next to him, and that collapses. But then, like an idiot, he immediately opens the door to get out, and the zombie's there.
Yeah. That's when he bolts to the fire department, right?
Right.
Right. Gotcha.
So, yeah, that was just a really good, very intense episode, and they keep it short. One of the things I'm glad a show like this is realizing is that when you're doing a streaming show, you don't have to worry about commercials, you don't have to worry about time slots. You can make an episode as long as the episode needs to be. It needs to be long. And one of the great things about the series is that when does the longest episode tend to be? It's either going to be it tends to be the finale, right? Because they're bringing everything together. And that's probably the shortest episode of the whole series.
That's right. Yeah.
And it's great. It's just boom, does what it has to, and you're out of there.
Generally, the pacing of those episodes are better when they're not worried about, we have to fit an hour. We have to fit this, or we have to fit that. Right. They seem to be just doing what the story takes.
Right.
So, yeah, that's the pacing feels good.
That's when you end up having the scene in the diner where they all sit around and commiserate and tell their life stories, what their job was, you know, where they're married, how many kids do they have, what their childhood trauma was, you know, whatever their core motivation is. That's where that kind of stuff tends to play out, right, where you have to start milking the drama that doesn't cost any money.
Right. Yep. Oh yeah. And you know what, Lance? It was the reason he was escaped. It was the library where the zombie takes out the guy, and that's when he was able to escape. For some reason, I thought it was the grocery store.
Right.
Yeah, it was a difference. Yeah. But yeah, right. For other shows, to fit an hour, they drag out stuff that isn't necessary and whatnot. So yeah, it's unfortunate.
So let's go on. Does anyone have anything else to say about Alone?
No.
No.
Now we're back to Diner, and we've kind of already talked about Diner for episode 5.
Well, Diner, the episode's called Eat.
No, it's called Diner, I thought.
No, the episode's Eat is the name of the actual episode.
Wikipedia listed as Diner, but okay.
Or maybe Eat is the name of the first title card.
Yeah, you're probably right. Yeah,
that's probably okay. So if Eat's the first title card, then maybe the whole thing is Diner. All right, so
Eat is the first title card or placard or whatever you want to call it. Yeah.
And here you started with what we were just making fun of, which is we are introduced to Manny and Carmen, who are the two sitting in the back of the black van or the black SUV.
And Philip.
And well, we haven't been met. We start with those two. And Manny is basically giving his backstory to Carmen, who apparently he's romantically involved with. So how would she not know this? I don't know. But he's basically talking about, well, how he used to get bullied. And then one day he realized Manny's got a man up. And, you know, he's about
I don't, I don't think I got the idea that they started dating within the past, you know, couple of weeks. So they may not know each other well enough. They're, you know, they're just, you know what I'm saying?
But he is giving us his origin story, and as he's giving us his origin story, Barbara, I think, is slams into the window and scares the crap out of him and
probably
half the viewers. Yes, zombie Barbara. And so I just thought that was, again, that was fun. And then he gets chastised for leaving the blinds up. So basically you get a division here. You know, where you have Carmen, who's the girlfriend, and Manny. Sun is kind of by herself because she doesn't speak any English. And so Phil, who is in the passenger seat in the black van, approaches William and, you know, starts offering, well, we need a plan, you know. But this is all, he's clearly conspiratorial. Can't imagine this. He's saying, "Oh, this isn't as bad as the government says it is. It's all being blown out of proportion." Eerie how much that echoes stuff that you see on certain places in network TV and on the radio and on the internet today.
Fake news.
Yeah. But at this point, I guess this is where Carmen shares with them the idea of the horde. They talk about them being like ants, so like army ants that build bridges, which, by the way, is very similar to the World War Z type zombies. We just haven't seen them because that takes a lot of money and probably goes way outside the scope. So you get a little bit of intergroup tension, but they do have a common goal, which is to get the fuck out and kill the zombies. So they get a great idea, which is have Sun sit at the window and not tap on the window, just and call the zombies over. Keep your fingers crossed that they don't break the fucking window. And they'll go outside with weapons and they'll sneak up on the zombies from behind and kill them. And that plan goes about as well as you can expect it would go, because they find it's a lot harder to kill a zombie than it is in most movies and TV shows.
Well, they honestly don't spend a lot of time discussing their plan. I mean, they could have found like a broom and sharpened it a little or something to, you know, kind of keep the zombies at bay, but they don't do much to prepare
them.
Well,
again, this feels like a very real person plan, right? It feels people who have not role played, you know, this situation. Right. They have never touched a 20-sided die. But if they don't roll a one, they definitely roll a two on their attempt to sneak up on the zombies and kill them, because they don't get the killing blow, right? They don't hit them hard enough, you know, and it's the reality is that it's really hard to destroy a human skull. Manny grabs a freaking fire extinguisher as his weapon?
Right.
I think that's what it is.
Phil's smart. He has a cleaver. Manny grabs a meat tenderizer. It's a large mallet, right, with spikes on it, so that works. I don't remember what Carmen picked up.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't really matter. I mean,
it doesn't. No, but it goes badly. It goes comedically badly but it feels real, right? It feels, and that's again this authenticity, this reality,
right?
Of it is who's the showrunner? Do you remember his name?
Yes, two guys. Schaefer. Schaefer. Yeah, Carl Schaefer and John Hyams.
Okay, and they really have a good way of bringing reality to this, bringing elements of what would probably really happen if you tried to do that, and that's a good example of it. And so they scramble back to the diner, you know, before they, you know, they barely make it. And it's time to come up with plan B. And while you're right. there, you do take a cutaway. You have a little bit with our group from the school now, with Spears and Rose and the Whistler guy. They're walking in the woods. Rose hallucinates her daughter. That shit annoys me. But they do stumble upon her. So finally, our group, who were together at the fence at the end of the first episode, are now finally back together in the fifth episode, but separate because half are in the diner, half are out. And right. this is the other thing that I laughed at this one, and this also felt so natural to me. So the zombies are distracted. And so Spears goes to walk up to one of them with his gun to shoot it in the head.
Yeah, point blank.
Point blank. And that's when the guys inside the diner are getting ready to enact their new plan. There's noise. The zombie reacts, still doesn't see Spears. And Spears basically shits his pants and runs back into hiding before he gets caught. Which I thought was great, because he's been presented up to this point. He's the black guy in the gun with the soldier's uniform that he stole by killing a dude. He's clearly the tough guy of the group. Nope. Runs back, you know, just because he gets startled. It's a very human, very like primitive, paranoid fight or flight adrenaline reaction. And I thought that was great.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And it was a great setup for the episode too, because he's about to do what he's about to do, and the other characters are about to do what they're about to do, and they screw up his plan, and then there's the whole chaos, and then eventually they both come together and take out the zombies, and then that guy Phil, he's gets killed because they
Phil's got a scratch. They don't know if it's a bite. It might be infected, and he's a bit of an asshole anyway. So they come up now.
They break his leg or something too, don't they?
Plan B is that he's going to be bait, and so yeah, they beat up on him. They throw him out there as bait, and then the idea is just to go out and beat the zombies to death.
It was definitely a great way to take care of him.
Well, right. and the reason. You may say, why would they do that to, you know, just randomly pick a person? But the thing is that this Phil guy's, first of all, he's kind of the third wheel, because Sonnen and William are together, and then Carmen and Manny are together, and he's the third wheel. And though he's
makes
kind
himself
of
the victim.
Well, that's the victim. That's what I was about to say. Even though he's kind of a quote unquote leader type guy, he's the sociopath, because he's saying, well, we got to kill someone, you know, because then we can all escape. And so he's making enemies pretty easily. And also, he was one of the guys that was in the black truck. So you already know that he's kind of a dirty guy anyway. So, yeah, he was a bad guy. So it's not like he wanted to kill Son, and instead it turned out to be him.
I like how they deal with him fairly quickly, too. Like, it's this episode, and he's done for by the end.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing about this show, too, is that they weed out the sociopaths quick. And we don't have to have – they don't go to say, well, everybody's a human being, and we have to accept their dignity as a human, so we have to bring them along. No, if they're a troublemaker, you get rid of them right away. Boom, done. And that's the problem with other zombie or apocalypse or pandemic shows, is that they always let the troublemakers or the bad people stay around. And this show does not.
No.
Yeah.
Right. And he basically invites it because he's trying to split them up. He tries playing one side against the other.
Fails miserably
and fails. Cause that's the problem. If you start trying to play one side against the other, trying to divide things, you have to know what you're doing, or man, can it blow back on you? And it does badly for him here.
Indeed. Yeah. And that's how we get our group back together. And then Manny and Carmen are the new members of the seven. And then they become eight again. They're six here. And then they become seven again, I think, in the next episode, when they go to the bunker.
They hunker down for the night. And one of the things, it was funny, I was checking some things, and you unfortunately stumble upon comments on the internet, and some people apparently missed the fact that Manny had said, "I know where to get your weapons," in the diner episode. So the next is they go to this bunker, and what's cool is that this is a heist episode that takes out everything except the heist. Right. So, you know, normally in the heist episode, you have them like all gathered around. They walk through the plan. You get an imaginary image of the actors playing out the plan if everything went perfectly. So that way, when the shit hits the fan, one, you know what they're supposed to be doing. But two, you know when things go wrong.
Right.
All we see here is the group. We start off with a couple of soldiers on the roof playing chess, and I think it's the two soldiers from the first episode that Spears had issues with.
Yeah.
They're keeping an eye on the front door, and they're watching this group come in. They split up, and it's Rose and Carmen and Manny go to the front door and, you know, knock on the door and basically say, "Hey, you like what we brought you?" And they're referring to Rose. Clearly the idea of using her as a sex slave, right?
Right. Did you think Rose knew that she was being used as bait before this even happened?
Yeah, probably, because she didn't react right when they said that.
Seemed like a really dangerous plan to me.
Yeah.
For her, anyway.
Oh, it's a terrible plan, but at this, right, you know, and
she almost does get raped, and she would have got raped if the shit hit Stefan didn't occur.
Right. So they take, well, the way this worked, it's unlikely to have happened or have had enough time for it to happen, because this has to be quick. And this is another episode. It's not that long. And this is one where they really play well with perspective. So you start with it from sort of Rose's perspective as Rose is shuttled off into a room of hostages.
Right. And Lance is there.
And one of the things, the camera focuses, then finally settles on Lance, who's cuffed to a bed and been drugged.
He's enough. Yeah.
And we hear noises, and he starts screaming, "Stop, stop." So something is happening to Rose, and we assume she's being assaulted.
Yes, yes. Oh, well, there's no doubt. The noise is her about to get raped or whatever, and his response was "stop, stop," because he didn't want her to get raped, obviously. Yeah, no doubt about it.
And so then we cut to what's happening with Manny. As Carmen. I said, Manny and Carmen. And Manny and Carmen clearly know the people there.
Right.
And they're kind of like told to go into, there's a rave going on a party going on in a room. And they said, "Oh, he's waiting for you." And rather than go in the room, they quickly sneak off to the back door, let the rest of the team in. And we follow Sun and Manny and Spears as they go to the armory, load up a bunch of guns. And Sun and Manny take the guns, which are in duffel bags, and sneak off into an air vent that leads back to the, because this is an underground bunker, that lead back to the surface to get away with the guns.
Right.
And then we go to is this where the, right, and at this point there's a power outage. You hear screams. We see what actually has happened is that Lance has gone in with Carmen. William's gone with Carmen. William shuts off the power, and so he's the one that shut the power off. But then he's stuck in the room with the power and sees there's a zombie outbreak. How the fuck did this happen? And doesn't know what to do. And he barely escapes outside. Then we follow what happened with Rose. And Rose is not raped, but she is almost raped. So clearly she's intended to be raped. We never get past the, you know, get down and start sucking phase. And she never gets beyond the threat. And again, the power goes out. And so when the lights go out and the zombies attack, she's able to steal, grab Lance, and they work their way out. We see Spears gets the bag out of the and hears some horrible noise. It gets outside, grabs a bag, hears all the terrible noises coming out of the ventilation shaft. And when we don't see what happened, so then we cut in to see what happened there. And in the panic, someone, I guess, bullets go off. Manny gets killed while he's in the air shaft and turns and starts chasing after Sun.
Right.
Yep.
And she just manages to get away. They leave one or two bags or the weapons behind, and Spears saves Sun, shoots Manny in the air vent. And then the last part of it is the last card, which was not part of the plan. For some reason, Carmen goes into the rave, finds, I'm guessing, the guy in charge.
Yeah, or someone that may have raped her or stole money from her.
Or someone did something that she's pissed at this guy, but he's not aware that she's pissed at him. And she kills him, and that's what starts the thing. She kills him in this crowded room. He turns, and
he's pure patient chaos. Zero.
Pure chaos.
And that,
starts point.
Chaos. Right.
Yeah, she's indirectly the reason that Manny dies.
Right. Oh, and the whistling guy was hanging outside so that once they came through the door, he's got something to put in front of the door to block it so nobody can pursue. So everyone is stuck inside, they're trapped, and you assume they're all gonna die.
Right. Or become zombied. Yeah.
And this is what'd you think of this episode?
Thought it was strong.
Yeah, the first time I watched it, I felt it was a little long, but it was still an awesome episode. Barrett said, it was pretty awesome. I mean, it was kinetic, had a lot of action, and then the coda where they show the rave, and then she takes like a ice pick, stabs the guy, and then just walks away, and no one notices it happened because it's, you know, everybody's dancing and drugged out or whatever, and then he falls over and turns into a zombie. I mean, the whole episode I thought was solid, even if it was a little long, at least for me. What about you, Mike? What are you implying?
Yeah, I remember having a little trouble with this episode the first time, but once I knew what was going on and I rewatched it yesterday, I ended up liking it a lot more because I understand.
Yeah, same here.
Because this really comes out of nowhere, right? That not completely, because he said we're going to get weapons, so I could put that in there. But since we never see them plan, we never hear the plan.
And we don't even know who these people are in the rave, except that they're probably bad people.
Right. I do think this is smart of the showrunners. They don't tell you anything. They show you everything and let you figure it out on your own.
Right. Oh, and we'll never know, right? Because, we're in spoiler territory. Carmen dies too later on. So it's never explained. And it'll never be explained. So it's interesting, but continue, Mike.
Yeah. So that's it. Right. So what happens here? Well, we don't, you know, what? So was that uncertainty, I think, was throwing me the first time of not knowing what's going on. When I was able to rewatch it, knowing what was going on, I enjoyed the episode a whole lot more.
I felt exactly the same way. I was a little confused the first time I watched it. I don't know if confused is the right word, but it seemed a little overly chaotic to my mind. So I had a hard time just staying focused on it. But when I watched it a second time, I was like, yeah, it's a pretty solid episode.
What about you, Kevin?
Yeah, I thought it was a solid episode too. It was kind of a connections episode. You know, it's just how one little thing can just cause so much pandemonium. And I mean, I have no idea if Carmen planned on all that happening or not, just because, I mean, she stabs a guy in the neck. It was probably she knew that he was going to become a zombie and that the zombie was going to attack all the people there and cause a panic. But the problem is that because, one, it caused a panic, but two, it also caused more zombies, which caused more of a panic. And it just blew up in their faces. I mean, it all in all, it just blew up in their faces. And
it wasn't really. And then what was it? Then they turn out the lights or something like that, or shut off the power. It just did not seem like a good idea.
Yeah, it really blows up in her face more than anybody's.
It blows except for Maddie, because and she loses her boyfriend,
right?
As a result, and it's your own fault, woman. I mean, it's your own fault, lady. I mean, why? You know, I don't know. I mean, I understand why she did it, but the problem is that they didn't really think it through very well.
Well, clearly this was these two, if they were still in good with whoever was running this organization, I don't think they ever would have thought to steal from him and run away. So it's possible Manny was in on that aspect of it too. But clearly, I guess in hindsight, they must have had a grudge against the guy who's running this underground club. And wanted to give him one last fuck you. You know, this is one last, going back to what Manny was saying, you know, it's time for Manny to man up and stand up to his bully, right? You know, when giving his childhood story. So maybe that plays into it, is maybe this is the same thing, because this is a big guy, right? The guy that she kills is a little bit of a Hulk.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, right. Well, and the thing is, too, is that by killing him, she kills everybody.
Yeah, but well, I don't think either one of the smartest people in the world.
But the thing is that was he the lead? Was he okay? Was he the same guy that was with? I'm sorry, I just completely blanked on her name. Hang on a second.
Rose.
Was he the same guy with Rose? Yeah, with Rose.
I don't think so, because the guy with Rose was with her when the lights went out.
Right.
And people started panicking.
Oh,
so
no, it was a different guy. It was a different guy.
Right. Because the thing is that the guy with Rose seemed to be the one that was more in control. This guy at the party, or at the rave, just happened to be some guy. And I think she just happened to just say, okay, I'll just dance with him and stab him in the neck. You know, and it's just, he was just some random guy at the rave that, you know, he wanted to take, you know, she just wanted to do a, you know, make him into a zombie to cause problems. But then I think, and the thing is, I think if they did that on its own, maybe it would have been all right. But then they turned out the lights, and it's just like, well, why did you do that as well? I mean, that's just making things even worse, and it's making things even actually tougher on you. And I don't know, just it, maybe, like I said, maybe the one guy making him a zombie and then running away, all right, but then turning off the lights just only made things worse. I don't know. I don't think doing both was a good idea.
All right, so we should probably move on to the next episode and the last episode and discuss them. All right, what do we got? What do we want to talk about? Let's see. The tunnel episode. Let's talk about that. So it's basically them meeting these soldiers in this like a sewage tunnels or something? I don't even know what they are.
Well, it looks like underground connection tunnels.
Yeah.
Kind of like utility tunnels or something like that. I don't know. Because,
right.
I mean, yeah. It's obviously not sewage, because there's, I wouldn't say furniture,
no,
but there's stuff there. What?
It's no poop.
Right. There's none of that. Right. There's nothing.
Yeah, it's utility. It's utility, for sure. Yeah,
yeah, it's
well,
a utility one.
Like the hospital downtown here has a tunnel over to another place that goes under the roads and everything, so they can get back and forth easily. It looks kind of like that, something similar, you know, maybe weather related, but it's no weather out there, so can't be that.
Yeah, well, and that's what it is. There's no doubt. So they're going to camp out there. They meet a bunch of soldiers. Soldiers basically say this will be safe. You know, you go through the tunnel later. They'll bring you to the other side of the, which will bring you right to near where the stadium is, which is where you're trying to get at and whatnot. And then the big twist is the soldiers discover that Spears is the guy that they're looking for. Right?
Yep.
Well, they stumbled on him, but it was the guy that they were
Right.
They wanted from the beginning of the series.
Right. And really what it does is it shows Rose killing the soldiers to save Spears.
Yeah, it's a great scene.
And it is a great scene. And then Spears, we now know, isn't really Spears. Or at least everybody else knows now. She does, anyway. She knows that Spears is an imposter. But me and Barrett were talking about it like 3 weeks ago on text, and we both agreed that we probably would have done the same thing because Spears saved her, and Spears is part of her family now, or her crew, or whatever you want to call it, that it makes sense that she would support him over random soldiers.
Anyone's well, obviously opinion? Didn't see her as a threat.
Yeah, and I was wondering, because, again, feeling like a video game, right? How many times played video games have you played, like first-person shooters walking through narrow corridors or underground sewers or access tunnels or whatever they are, you know, and with a flashlight, you're waiting for some, for the monster, the alien, the zombie, whatever, to come out, or the Nazi to kill you. I think when their back is to her, when they turn around, her gun is down. She's hiding the gun, so they don't realize she's armed.
Yep. Right. Yep.
And it really shows her character changing, you know, as it's happening. You see her character just change and go through this and make a decision, like a hard decision.
Right, right. Yeah, exactly. And pretty much that's really the, I mean, even though the episode is seemed longer than usual or longer than other episodes, that was pretty much the whole point of the episode, I think.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, it also,
I mean, you know, they're talking about how bad Spears is, but she doesn't believe it because her experience with Spears has been positive. He has been a protector. He has been decent. He has been kind. He hasn't been a jerk. He hasn't tried to do anything. I mean, the first time they meet each other, he saves her life.
Right, exactly. Yep.
Right, and I think an important part of this is that she asks Spears, right, is this true, what they're saying? And he admits that he's not Spears, right, that he lied, but he's not a murderer. The fact that he, I think, confessed to her, sort of, told her some element of the truth, because he could have denied the whole thing, top to bottom. That, I think, confirms in her she probably has more reason to trust him. She already has reason to trust him by his action, if not his words. And then he speaks at least a partial truth to her, and speaks to her in a way that she believes him. Now, a good con man can certainly lie and make you believe it. But I think again, she has no reason to think these guys aren't soldiers, that they don't know what the military is. But at the same time, she has more reason to trust Spears, especially because he had now admitted he lied about who he was, weirdly enough. So she decides to side with Spears.
Yep. And that's anything else in this episode, or do you want to go to the next episode?
Next, I think that pretty much covers that episode. I mean,
pretty much, yeah.
The main beat of it.
Yeah, again, going back to the video game thing, you know, whenever you have a video game and you go get to the final boss, there's always that room that has all the supplies you're going to need. That gives you, and that there's that warning of, all right, better make sure you're healed up before you move on, done everything you want, because there's no turning back now. And that's kind of this episode. They've got all their guns. They get a chance to rest. They get a chance to reload, to do everything they want, and catch their breath before they head into the final battle.
Yep. All right, so let's talk about the final episode. It's a short episode, as you said, Mike, but it's awesome. And it's kinetic, and it has a couple of surprise deaths, especially one character. And me and Barrett are still not quite sure if the character was killed because of his injury or because he was wounded by a zombie, meaning bit. But we'll get into that in a second. All right, let's talk about it. So they're right outside the stadium, along with hundreds of other uninfected that are obviously trying to do the same thing. And as you get closer to the stadium, the chaos is bigger because there's more people. And also, some of those people were probably bitten and were the type of people that weren't telling anybody they were bitten. And as they get closer to the stadium, they finally die and turn into zombies. And so it's total mayhem around the stadium. And it's also a very metropolitan area. So people are coming in and out of shop doors and around corners and whatnot. So what do we want to talk about?
I think it's visually one of the most dynamic episodes. You've got fighter jets flying through the city. You've got all sorts of groups of people with weapons. Zombies coming from everywhere, and the people aren't necessarily being careful of the people they don't know, so they're shooting zombies and other people alike, which are also turning into zombies. It's just, it's a great visual episode of what's going on in the city.
Sure.
It's utterly pandemonium. I mean, yeah. It's utter pandemonium. It's, you know, it's the thing is, it's one of those, okay, where it all... The thing is, it's just kind of all of a sudden, where all these people come from, where did they all get weapons, and they're all just kind of running around all over the place, and where'd this all happen? Because the guy, the Whistler guy, he just leaves them. He says, okay, doesn't say anything. They're like, you know, come with us. He turns around and walks away.
Well, he finds the dog
and he leaves.
Yeah, and he leaves, yeah.
It's so the final survivor. Yeah, that's... It's the final survivors, the people that made it that far that were able to get weapons that are trying to get to the safety of the stadium.
And there's zombies all over the place, obviously, because that's where the food is.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Carmen gets killed pretty quick from friendly fire.
Yeah, yep. That was a harsh scene.
Yeah. So she's gone. And so now it's just six of them left. Rose, Spears, Son, William, Lance, and there's just five of them left. Yeah, because Carmen just got killed, and Manny was already dead. So it's just the five of them left. And you figure that this is your group that is going to survive. I mean, they're the main characters from the beginning. And so there's total chaos. Everybody's getting shot. Guns are getting jammed.
They're getting split apart.
Yeah, people steal each other's guns. They bump into each other, and people are threatened. And some people just shoot without checking to see who they're shooting. It's just total chaos. Zombies are everywhere. So Lance loses his gun because he bumps into somebody. That somebody picks up his gun. And then that person gets wiped out by a zombie. And then Lance just has bolts. And so he gets separated from Spears. And the last we see Lance is he's running down a highway exit or entrance and under a bridge. And a bunch of zombies chasing after him. And that's cuts from him. And that's where his story ends for the season. And then the rest of the four are heading up onto like a catwalk that leads to the stadium, probably a catwalk that goes over like the highway that Lance just ran onto. And this is where me and Barrett are still confused. Does anybody know, William, there was a scene from episode 7, I think, where William gets hurt on the ankle, and that kind of makes everybody know that may be a Chekhov's gun, right? That it's going to come back later.
Well, he says it's an old injury. So he re-injured himself. And so the last, you know, so the last episode and a half or so, he's been limping.
Right. And that makes sense if they're planning to use that as something, because obviously they didn't have to write that into his character unless they're going to use it for something. So the question is was he bit by a zombie, or was the injury just holding him back? And
the injury was holding him back. It was getting worse, and he couldn't run. It was getting worse, and he couldn't run.
All right.
And it doesn't really matter. Either he couldn't run and asked to be killed rather than be fed, or he got nipped by a zombie along the way. But whichever one it was, he was done for.
Well, it looked like he was, I mean, from what I gathered, it looked like he was slowing down. He knew that he was going to slow them down, and he would have rather been shot through the head rather than become a zombie and chase after him. So that's when this was the heartbreaking scene where he yells out, "Kill me."
Yeah.
And I don't remember which one it was, but they shot him in the head, and this was one of those weird scenes where here's a guy that was there the entire season, and he just goes just like that. I mean, no soliloquy, no, "Oh, I'm dying. Please tell my brother I'm sorry." You know, it's just, okay, boom, let's go. Let's keep on going.
Right. And you notice who does it. It's Rose.
Well, Rose really didn't know him.
Right. That's what I was going to say. Right. Well, Son was the one that got all like pissed and devastated. But again, what are you going to do?
Well, because she was, his friend. I mean, even though they didn't, understand each other very well. But the thing is, it was obvious is that during this entire time, they were, getting to know each other, and not having a romantic relationship, but definitely having a friendship relationship with each other, that they were getting close in that aspect. So, and so now she just sees the guy that was pretty much her only real friend just die just like that. You're going to be, even though you're kind of panicky, you're still going to have that bit of emotion there.
Well, and in hindsight, he wouldn't have made it. They almost don't make it.
No, right. and that's why Rose shot him. Because Rose was a decent enough if there's anything that out of many things we know, that Rose is a decent enough person that she wasn't going to just let him say, "Oh, too bad for you, I'm on my way." She would have helped him. And I think the only reason why she shot him is because
they were swarmed by the zombies, and he would have been ripped up shreds.
Right. And he told them, and it was obvious why, and so they said, and so she just did it, and just kept on going. But, and I'm sure she, she felt something about it, but she just really didn't have time to process what happened because they were getting chased by zombies.
But it sucks because he's the best character.
Apart from Son, he's the second best character, but
I even liked him better than Son. I thought he was the best.
I did too.
You're a racist. Racist!
How am I racist? Because he's Latino and
Mexican. Because he's not Asian. You're blaming him for the virus.
What? That's awful. What? Hold on. What did he say? What?
You don't like her because she's Asian. That's the reason why you're racist, bastard. That's the...
Dude, all my ex-girlfriends are Asian, for Christ's sake.
Exactly, the ex-girlfriends are Asian.
No, the ex-girlfriend, not the Let's, same with Let's, too. Same with... I don't know what it
was. Let's is an Asian? What are you talking about?
No, I've dated Asians.
I don't know what Mike's talking about, but I...
Phil, we're breaking your balls, okay? That's just what we're doing.
Seems to be working, too.
Working. You're opening yourself up for it.
Son is totally the MVP of the show. She's got, and I don't know what they're going to do for a sequel.
They're going to definitely introduce a lot of new characters, obviously.
Well, they have to. I almost would rather them not continue with these characters.
Right.
And just tell a different version of this story somewhere else in the world. I don't really want to know Son's backstory. My imagination will be good enough. I think should be fairly mundane.
Same with Spears too. I mean, I don't really care to I like the mystery of who Spears really was, right? So,
right. You know, he was a hustler, right?
Right.
In all likelihood, he was a bit of a con man. But the rest of it, who knows?
Right. So, yeah, I would be quite satisfied if they did other characters in L.A. or just in another city, like you said, Mike.
Or I mean, look, I understand there's a desire to do this in the city because that is where people are. You know, but I'd be curious to see if they could find a way to do it differently. Look, if you go too far, like if you're doing it out in the middle of Montana, you know, they may not even know that there's a zombie apocalypse going on. So I don't know. You could go there, but seeing it again someplace else, maybe someplace less urban, or maybe go even more urban, right? Right down in the middle of Chicago or the middle of New York City instead of in the suburbs of Los Angeles. Maybe that would be a little different, you know, that where you have to get, you know, down from the top of an apartment building. So there's a lot of ways they could go with it. I'm perfectly willing to let them do what it is. My two beefs. Beef number one is that in the episode with Lance is that he hurts his hand so badly he can't use it to put a key into the ignition.
Right.
And then he's like in the grocery store for 5 minutes. He put a Band-Aid on his thumb and he's using his hand fine.
He's a fast healer.
He found a healing potion. And it's like a video game, right? He just regenerated.
Exactly.
It didn't work for William's leg though. But other than that nitpick, it's the idea that you have this sort of the Steven Spielberg War of the Worlds ending where I understand that the daughter may have survived and made it to the stadium. But the idea that she's the second person to come out of the tunnel. Send Bobby Joe out there with the shotgun, and then send little Susie May out there next with no weapons, and then we're covered. We're good, no matter who those people are.
Maybe they saw him come in, and so they just figured the guy was just going to escort her out. I don't know. But
another issue too for that ending too was. The only people that made it into the stadium are Sun, Spears, and Rose, and there's not like other random people that break in with them.
Well, they all got blocked out in that tunnel. I mean,
but you would think at least one or two persons would have somehow got through.
Well, maybe they got through earlier, or maybe they're going to come through in a couple more minutes. We just focused on these three, and when they got in, they just got in, and when nobody else was there.
Right. But no, but I mean, most people were heading there anyway, so you figure it would have been a constant stream of people going, you know.
I think this was the last stream of people getting there. And
yeah, because
what made it through was what lived.
Yep.
Yeah, you could be right. Yeah, I mean, these are.
And there weren't many of those.
Exactly.
I think your nitpick, Mike, is the most valid one, the one about why the little girl is the one that comes out of everybody that's probably in the stadium, you know.
Well, but I also understand.
Yeah, go on.
The reason is that they're, you know, whether it's for money or for time or whatever, what's the alternative? That they wait for a whole bunch of people to shuffle out or let them get taken into the tunnels and have to wade through a bunch of people who are, you know, screaming out, Mary Sue, where are you? So we know it's going to end with her seeing her daughter. So fuck it. Just cut to the chase. It's sloppy, but it's so at the end. You know, this wasn't the case of like when I mentioned Steven Spielberg's War of the Worlds, where the son was dead and miraculously he's alive at the end. You know, it wasn't like that. We kind of knew and suspected she was going to be alive. So that's not a big deal. It's just how convenient it was that she was the second person in line for her to come out to greet her. But I understand that's just, an expediency thing and probably a budget thing.
Yeah, makes sense.
Hey, it's the end of the story.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
All right. They said season two is in development. Actually, it was supposed to be filming, but it was shut down because of the coronavirus. So... obviously, they'll probably pick it up whenever they can begin to start filming and shooting again. But at the moment, it's in limbo. But technically, like every other movie our TV show that is in production, it's stalled because of the coronavirus, not because they're not planning to make it.
But I hate this crap because it's been 11 months since it came out.
Right?
So yeah. if this was... So if they're still filming it, unless they were filming it in China and they had to shut down in December, right. It means they waited a long time to get it going. Now, I don't know what the film, what the showrunners were doing. You know, maybe they had to kick around ideas. Maybe they really wanted to sharpen the script, and maybe the results will be there when it comes out. But clearly this was not going to be coming out a year after the first one, the way a normal TV series used to do, you know, where you'd get the new show starting every September or October. And it's this, and we talked about this on Bullets, Brothels, and Bots, a Westworld podcast that you can find on darkdiscussions.com, that when you have this like 18-month gap between seasons of Westworld or Game of Thrones, You Know Nothing, Jon Snow, darkdiscussions.com, it kind of kills some of the momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's... And you just end up building, for some people, it kills the momentum. You end up losing a large portion of the audience. And for the rest of the audience are just so starved for something when it comes back, their expectations are going to be so high, it's going to be kind of hard to meet them. All right. Because you're right. Turning every premiere into an event as opposed to just a thing that's regularly scheduled. And man, this is just something that, again, people have forgotten about it. It's been a year.
Right.
People talked about it, and this is the problem with, I know people like Eric Webster, darkdiscussions.com, and Iskansity, like to just sit down and binge watch everything. They hate things being released 1 week at a time, but when you release it 1 week at a time, like Game of Thrones, you get people talking about it for a much longer period of time. Its cultural footprint tends to be larger.
Right. I mean, there's some exceptions. I mean, Drink, Ozark, you know, that was always highly anticipated, even though it's a year and a half, and then they drop it all at once.
And how long do you think people are going to be talking about it now?
Well, that's true.
They're going to talk about it for a week, and then they'll move on to whatever the next thing is that drops.
Right. But it won't be forgotten.
Well, not forgotten, but it'll be dropped. Again, if you want to spread word, have it hearing people in the office, not now, but eventually... Maybe for Easter, hearing people are talking about it week after week, it's going to help drum up that kind of interest. As opposed to there's a sudden buzz. You got to watch Black Summer. It's like, oh, but I'm in the middle of, I don't know, Orange is the New Black or whatever. Or I'm in the middle of Ozark. I'll get to it when I get to it. But by that point, there's a whole bunch of new series that have been dropped, and people never get around to it.
Well, there's an example right there. Orange is the New Black, right? I mean, that one. Isn't forgotten, right? I mean, there may be the buzz like for 3 weeks because the new season's dropped and then disappear, but it's not forgotten.
But they also came out, at least the early ones, I'm pretty sure, came out on a yearly basis.
Yeah, all right, that's a fair point. Yeah.
You know, there wasn't like 2 years between them.
Right. Yeah, I mean, Ozark, it was like almost like, it seemed like a year and a half.
I think one of the new, the new model, there's so many TV shows, the actors can get so many jobs now that they have to work around their schedules more than they used to, too.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of actors that are oddly the leads or supporting in multiple shows, you know, besides they're just, yeah, it's kind of interesting how that works. Yeah. I know. It's not like the olden days where you were the lead or a supporting actor in one show and that's it, because that's the only show you did.
Yeah, I just looked it up. So Orange is the New Black, there were 7 seasons, and you look at the dates, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. So it just, they never missed a year, you know, and they all released in either June or July. So sometimes it was anywhere from 11 to 13 months between seasons.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. But yeah, so I don't know. I mean, if season 2 does come out after the coronavirus and they can start filming again or whatever they're doing now, post-production or whatever.
This would seem to be the best time to film, right? Because you don't have to cordon off the streets. They're all abandoned.
But yeah, so it'll drop and it'll get its viewership again. So yeah, I mean, I don't know what you actually really meaning to say, Mike, except that the buzz disappears because it's a binge drop.
I think it hurts the show when you leave it that long. It frustrates me as a fan that you're waiting this long between seasons. Right. I really wish they could manage to keep it going.
Hey, George R. R. Martin's book. Come on.
Well, that was weird. Anybody, even Game of Thrones used to come out every year until it got towards the end, and they were kind of padding it. And by that point, it was already a phenomenon, right? And they can milk it a little easier. Something like Black Summer. You're the new show on the block, right? It's like the new kid in the office. You better be showing up to work on time, and getting until your name is established. And once your name is established, you want to come in 15 minutes late because you stop at Dunkin' Donuts and for some coffee. That's one thing. But when you're the new guy, you better be coming regularly because people don't know. You make sure people know who you are. And I guess that's my issue with it.
Sure.
I just think it's going to hurt the show's prospects. Again, if you hurt the show's second season, there won't be a third. There won't be a fourth.
Yeah, exactly.
But I have no idea, what was the deal with Netflix going in? Did they expect this to be just a one-off? And because it kind of feels like that could be the end, right?
Yeah. Well, you keep on saying that, but I never felt that it was a one-off.
I think, but if it ended there, I don't think there's any questions hanging over me that were unanswered that I had to know to get a complete story.
I guess, but it's unsatisfactory.
All right.
I mean, I see your point because, yeah, she gets back to her daughter. That's the end. Poof. But I always felt that the last episode set up easily a second season, whether it would be American Horror Story where it's a different show every year or if it's an actual continuation of this.
Well, I think that when you get to the ending, it sets up every other zombie story that's ever been made, right? I mean,
well,
that's
well,
why
I don't
think it's that interesting.
Well, I agree with you. That's a fair point. Yeah, I don't care about that was Fear of the Walking Dead. The first six season episodes were really good because it's the apocalypse, and then after that, it just becomes Walking Dead again. And I was like, ugh.
Yeah, it just fell into that trap.
So you're right, but what they could do is do another 12 characters from the same village on the same day, and see their journey.
But again, then they run the danger of it being just more of the same, right? It's really hard to be original twice.
Right.
That's the challenge. It's
right.
Especially if you're playing in the same sandbox. Sure. As much as I like Westworld, this isn't the first time, that Jonathan Nolan did something because he did Person of Interest, which was there was a show about an artificial intelligence that was using people's behavior to predict the future.
Mm-hmm.
And what's Westworld eventually about? It's about a artificial intelligence that's using people's data to predict the future. There's a big running plot line in the show by the time you get to the third season.
Right.
He's repeating himself. He's repeating himself in a different way with a flashier budget and boobs. But
those boobs are nice too.
Because they're on HBO now, but it's basically repeating himself. So that's why I said I kind of hope that if they do something, they do something very different with it. I mean, it doesn't have to be – if they can find a way to pick it up with this cast, great. But find a way to avoid becoming all the other zombie films that we've always seen.
Right.
Well, it would be interesting maybe if you – from a different – let's just say a different part of the country, and they're kind of going through something similar – and then eventually they meet at the end, Sun and Rose and the rest of them.
Right. Yeah, it would be cool if they drop it in, say, Omaha, Nebraska, or Wichita, Kansas, or something. Some place you wouldn't expect, but still has a valid story to tell.
And there is the story that the zombie story that I really want to see that I know I am never going to get, and that's the zombie outbreak in Disney World.
That would be great.
Yeah, because of the kids.
I like
because
that idea.
Kids, yeah, right.
Well, yeah. Because
Disney wouldn't allow it anyway.
Well, Disney would never allow it, right? And I don't want it to be, zombie outbreak at Wally World. I would want it to be. I want to see zombies on It's a Small World, or or people running around backstage in the underground tunnels and in those familiar settings for people that have been there.
Someone that's dressed as Cinderella going after and chewing people.
Right. Exactly. You know, what happens to the zombie who's stuck in the Mickey Mouse costume and he can't bite anybody because he's got the giant head on, you know?
Exactly.
And you could do sort of like here, you have different stories. You could do like the different parks. You can have one group in Magic Kingdom and one group in Epcot and another group over in Hollywood Studio. And there's lots of different ways you could play with this if you wanted to, but they'll never let you get away with it.
All right. So
you'd have a better chance filming a zombie movie in the Pentagon.
Right. Okay. So let's wrap this up here. Give my final thoughts and whatnot. We'll go around the table once more. So let's start with you, Barrett.
I thought it was a great show. I really enjoyed it. It had some really powerful episodes, and I'm looking forward to season two and seeing what they do with it, if it gets off the ground again once this coronavirus thing goes away.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I feel this is a great show. This was my favorite show of last year, as I mentioned, for TV, not including Game of Thrones. Definitely worth checking out. It's more than just a zombie survival story. It's chaos, and that's what makes this show awesome is the chaos, especially like we were discussing for the season finale. Huge thumbs up. Mike.
I would actually almost flip that. It is nothing but a zombie survival story. It's a survival story with no growth, no character development, really, or very little of it. It is focused strictly on the survival. I think it's smart in the way it plays with tropes. I love the way they put realistic touches in terms of people, for the most part, are going to act like people will. They do things that are not always rational. They do things out of emotion. They make silly mistakes that don't usually happen in a real zombie film, you know, when everything is staged and everyone is a crack shot and and everybody who picks up a gun is able to hit the zombie in the head at the first try. I really like, and I think they pull off some very effective scenes, right? You always get the money sequence in the zombie film. And this is basically nothing but those sequences for the most part, or at least four, five, six of them in this film are in this 4 hour construct that they put together for us. You just have some great zombie moments.
Absolutely. Kevin.
Like I said, I'm not a zombie I'm not a big fan of the zombie movies or anything like that, but I did enjoy this. I thought it was good. I thought it was put together well. I like the storyline. I was just impressed with it overall. And like I said, as someone who's not a big zombie person, I would recommend this one.
All right, very good. The article is what's-on-netflix.com from March 18th. I just put it on the Facebook group. It says... it's called Black Summer Season 2 Production Delayed Due to Coronavirus and What to Expect. But it says here, the first sentence of the article, Black Summer is returning for a second season on Netflix in 2020, but is one of the many productions currently hampered by the pandemic that is the coronavirus. So technically, Mike, they were going to release it 1 year later from the last one. It's just that the coronavirus screwed the whole thing up.
All right.
Yeah.
I did hear somebody on a podcast who's a producer in Hollywood saying how this is going to give lots of people the opportunity to pull the ripcord on projects that they realize they never should have greenlit.
Yeah, I believe it. Yeah.
That they're just going to say, oh my God, this is turning out terribly. And because of the coronavirus, they can now just
pull the plug,
pull the plug and take the insurance and say, well, we were going to make it,
yep,
but you know, the virus ruined it all, and now we're never going to finish it.
Yep.
And so we're now
and all the people that were involved are now doing other things and blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we're never going to be able to do that theatrical release of Cats that includes the buttholes.
Yeah, that's right. And that's a true story. Or at least it could be. Who knows if someone made it up, but it's been going around.
It's, yeah. Well, suppose it was there. And I don't know if that would have made it better or worse. I really don't.
Indeed. I do have to give Mike credit, though. He did say the Taylor Swift part was good. Otherwise, the movie sucked. So I give you.
I am glad to have not seen it.
Me too.
I didn't have to pay for it, so.
I saw it with the kids, and the kids liked it. So, the best is it's just appeared on Amazon and Apple and all these other places to rent and or buy. And the kids say, "Oh my God, it's Cats! Let's watch it again." But of course, you can't watch it because it's not free yet. So, I would have to buy it, and so because it's only $19.99 to buy it, you can't even rent it yet. So, but they're already excited. We want to see it again.
I sometimes think you use your kids as an excuse to watch those movies.
Maybe so.
I think you are onto something there.
Maybe so. But either way, I did win the Taylor Swift autograph that scares the care through the silent auction, and I claim that it was for my kids. Even though it was probably for me, but
yeah, nobody believed that.
Probably.
No, nobody. Well, no, nobody. Nobody.
The autograph picture is in the toy room, hanging on the wall. So
just so you look good.
That's right. That's right. It's a good card. But
that's cool.
Yeah. And let's see. And I got it half the price that all of her autographs are being sold on eBay for. So I can't complain.
Well, because. Look, if you're looking to raise money on a Taylor Swift autograph, I can't think of a lot of places that would be less welcoming of Taylor Swift or less enthusiastic about Taylor Swift than at a horror convention. You know, they would they would have bid much higher on a Dee Snider autograph.
You're probably right. You're probably right. Though there is Taylor Swift and horror fans like myself. So.
Oh, there are. I'm not saying there's not, but I'm saying
demographically wise, a lot of the people that go to horror conventions are wearing leather and denim and
right
and black t-shirts. So
yeah
and have tattoos.
I could be in a very small group of horror fans that do not like heavy metal. You know, that's just me. And yeah. I'm not saying that there's no horror fans at the convention like Taylor Swift, but when you're trying to get a bidding going, you need people competing against each other.
Right.
And I don't think there would be enough there to really drive the numbers up.
Right, right. And that autograph was going to be mine, and that was that. So I don't care.
Your daughters. Your daughters. Right. It was going to be your daughters.
I'm starting to sound like Gollum now.
That's right.
My precious.
All right. So we want to wrap it up. So Barrett and Kevin, thanks for joining us. Me and Mike were talking about doing an episode on this like over a year ago. But again, you know, since it's 10 episodes to rewatch and all that. So it was good to get you guys involved. And then so appreciate it. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you very much.
All right. And with all that stated, for folks who are interested, it's still on Netflix. So it will be there probably forever since it's a Netflix original. And
until the virus takes out Netflix.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Or some of the Me Too problems that they had earlier. So check it out on Netflix. And with all that stated, Mike, why don't you lead us up?
Well, thank you once again for listening to Dark Discussions, and tune in tomorrow night as we discuss the Stuart Gordon film. Actually, I don't know when this is going to be released, but you can catch us every week at darkdiscussions.com.